Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, welcome to Thor Radio Network. Today is Friday, September 12th, 2014. We are here live. Free Mind Friday. Violence in America, Part 4. I'm your host and founder, Brother Sharif. We're going to be getting started here shortly. Just want to welcome everyone to the show. I will formally offer that welcome here shortly, trying to get prepared for this very important show. First of all, I have to give all honor and praises to the Most High, the Creator, for allowing us to assemble here once again under the umbrella of community, common unity, between all of the people in this country. Without him, I am able to accomplish absolutely nothing, and with him, As Yama say, the sky is not the limit, it is limitless. We have a very well educated, formidable guest here today. Lennon Honor will be joining the panel today with Thor, Brother Sharif, and Layla, Lori, and Rudy. And we will be discussing a variety of topics surrounded around the issue of domestic violence with a segue into the Ray Rice issue. So bear with us. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
We're back. Welcome to Thor Radio Network. We appreciate your patience. This is your host, Brother Sharif. American Violence, Part 4. Before I get started, we have a few announcements to make before I get into the crux of the show. Tomorrow, September the 13th, as announced last week, or rather this week, webinar tomorrow, The Hammer. The Hammer is coming down at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. If you want to attend that webinar or dealing with any kind of debt collection matter, foreclosure, this is not your run-of-the-mill webinar. The Mighty Hammer of Thor will be passed around for each of you to get a feel of how it works. We've done a lot of teaching and educating, and we feel it's time to arm you with some weaponry that would render some of your debt collectors possibly unconscious. It's tomorrow at 11 a.m. You can reserve a seat. There are several left. DebtShow, DebtShow, at yahoo.com. You can email us there to reserve a seat. I suggest you do so, as they say in the country, immediately. Again, we have to give all praises and honors to the Most High, to the Creator, who is all-powerful, all-knowing, and everywhere present. Today, again, we have Lennon Honor, and it is an honor to have him here at Thor Radio Network. His information was sent to all of you. His website. He is a writer, musician, video producer, talk show host, counselor. And his subject matter is fitting for the four-part series we've done so far on violence in America. He provides some inspirational speaking, and he speaks to an issue that I've been tackling, which is manhood, fatherhood, marriage, children, family, and personal growth. I do not think it's a coincidence at all that the Creator and the universe brought the brother to the attention of Thor. I want to thank KTO Radio, my brothers over there, Blue Pill and Red Pill, because it is there I derived the knowledge of his existence and summons him through the universe to appear. And I reached out, and he was more than glad to come here today to join us on this topic. Before I get to the topic, I want to go over a few things. We have really enjoyed the series thus far. We've had visitors that has come and contributed in a great, peaceful, loving, and spirited way. And we thank all that have joined in just to listen. We thank those that have participated. And we thank those that retrieve the information subsequent to its airing. But I also have to address a few things that is germane to this particular topic when we're dealing with family structure, men, women, children, society, the condition of our country.
And that's the issue of those that feel that they should be able to
come into our midst and our circle and bring forth energy and information that is neither conducive to our environment, but rather offensive to our environment. I want to apologize to all of you, being that we hold a free, so to speak, show, and we do not screen our guests. And we do not prevent anyone that would like to come here and congregate with us in the spirit of community. So we welcome everyone. And we're clear that Thor Radio is a diverse network and population of people. And I don't think any of you are aware of whether I have any beliefs other than the beliefs that I share with you in the consumer protection lane. And some of those are beliefs, and most of it is knowledge that I have acquired and things that I have experienced. But apart and aside from that, I do not discuss, nor do I force, convince, or portray any other beliefs with regards to religion, race, sexual identity. And those three topics are intentionally not addressed. One, because to be honest with you, I really don't care. I don't feed into the race war, the color war. Black, those are status, those are not races. Ethnicities and those categories were created by a man. But if you want to really get into the etymology and the real true history of words, color, white and black, has nothing to do with pigmentation. We can talk subjectively and objectively about those particular things, and Thor just tends to focus on important issues and real issues. That's why we take offense when we're visited by people or individuals who, although are entitled to their opinions, and they're entitled to share their beliefs and their views, but when one comes as a visitor into another environment, we always have to be conscious and aware that we bring our beliefs and our views in good spirit. And that was the topic of my monologue in the beginning of last week's show, where I specifically talked about the character and behavior of our men, which includes, but is not limited to, myself. Anytime somebody appears in another's environment in a manner that can be construed to most, including myself, to be racist, hateful, disrespectful, demeaning, ignorant, unfounded. I take issue with that. If I don't do it in my house, I'm not going to allow anyone else to do it. I also take serious issue with those that attempt to levy upon others by way of their voice or presence beliefs. And I'm assuming that everyone knows the definition of a belief. Many times you will hear a lot of people and lip syncers use belief and facts synonymously. They are diametrically opposed. Beliefs are beliefs. They're not facts. As we teach on this network and we discuss consumer protection laws and things of that nature, one of the two things you are made to understand is hearsay and facts. And I teach how you can intertwine those two elements into your life and not fall prey to deceptive media, believing what anyone tells you. In law, there are facts and there is hearsay. Hearsay can be considered belief, but it's not fact in law. But that said, I have an issue when people have the audacity to come into an environment not using their discernment to first identify what type of environment you're in, what the subject matter is, what the makeup of people are. People just strut themselves in environments and groups and communities first that don't belong to them with a pre-written disposition or speech that no matter what the surroundings are, they're going to release their beliefs and or venom. And they're going to profit that information based on their own beliefs as truth. And what we experienced last week was some of that, some of the bullyish and barbaric behavior that some people carry around. And many times when you hear them speak, their argument or their beliefs are unavailing. And we have men of all races that do this, who attempts to come in and quote history up to but not limited to information from thousands or millions of years ago. And the funny thing is that they do so in a manner that suggests that you either adapt to it, believe it, join in. Some of them sound like you need to submit or bow down to it, their beliefs, not their facts, or you're deemed obsolete, ignorant, stupid, irrelevant, and some other affectionate names. But, you know, consequently, this destructive hate and fear-mongering, spook tactic, and all that type of rhetoric has been passed on for generations. Generations we've been passed on information that was never authenticated. We infect our kids with these ideologies, these beliefs. And our kids carry these prejudices into future generations. We all know people today who hate other people based on information that was told to us or them through family, friends, neighbors. You know the rhetoric. They want to argue with you about an event that happened 10,000 years ago. And then want to try to convince you that it's truth. I don't even think they know how to spell the word truth, much less know the definition of truth. Race, religion, and sexuality are issues that will always invoke some negative emotions, fear, cultural differences, hate. It's just real easy to continue these conversations and continue regurgitating and reciprocating these beliefs with an emphasis on belief. I really ask that some of these people that carry this own old, worn-out rhetoric to listen to yourself sometime. Sometime I go back on my shows and I listen. I want to know how I sound, how I'm transitioning. I want to listen to what I say. I want to make sure that, by all means, I'm contradicting stuff, sound like an idiot. Look up the definition of idiot. You would. The funny thing I find is that a lot of these people talk and they really think they sound intelligent. They really do. But in reality, they're only intelligent amongst the low vibration, low frequency, low intellect community they reside in. And that residence may be geographically or in cliques and clubs and posses they may run around in. But the ironic thing is when you challenge a lot of these lip syncers and belief hoarders and surgically just remove those three topics from their lips, they start to look like a 90-year-old person without teeth. They no longer can talk, or they get emotional. They resort to calling you names once you tell them that I don't believe what you're talking about. I don't agree with what you're talking about. I don't like what you're talking about. And once you challenge them lightly, they just peel like a banana. They just resort to whining or, you know, calling names or reducing themselves to the infants that they are in their knowledge. We can all have our opinions, and that's fine with me. I want to make that clear. But if they invoke disturbances in your environment or my environment, specifically, I'm not going to have it. There is no truth other than the truth that I believe and the people on this call believe. Nobody will be bullied into believing you because you feel your mouth is loud. There is no mouth more louder than mine, at least here. There's nothing authentic about what these people talk about. They talk about the Bible. They talk about religion. They attack other people's religion. They talk about Jesus Christ. They talk about Mary. And if I had any one of you in court and ask you to provide an affidavit or testify as a competent fact witness to anything that went on in the 1600s or A.D. or B.C. or before that, I would absolutely embarrass you, such as what was done. Until you can proffer a picture, photo, poster, painting with you and a damn dinosaur, or with you and Jesus Christ, or Mary, or the pyramids, shut up. I find it interesting that we have so-called elders, and this is black, white, purple, brown, that push this rhetoric. And you will find now that our youth are quick to challenge the status quo of these so-called elders, as you seen last week. The youth are quick to step up to the nonsense these days because, in my opinion, they have that true masculinity and femininity that was of old because they've been abandoned by parents and elders, teachers. So through abandonment, they've become strong. They've become rebellious, and with good reason, which is some of the issues that Lynn and Honor is going to discuss today. Why a lot of these youth don't have respect for their parents, respect for men or women. There will never be a man in my lifetime, in my environment, that will be able to advance a belief in my presence so harsh and disruptive that you offend anyone in my audience, including myself. I'm going to be honest with you. There was an escape of the real blunt of the lion's rage that I wanted to levy upon you, but the universe prevented me from exercising that instinct to destroy. These things infect our communities and infect the minds of those that don't believe. But most of all, it just demonstrates some of the things that I spoke about in last week's show. We can speak about things from a million years ago, but we can't talk about yesterday. The only slavery going on today is economically and in your mind. And Thor Radio is doing its part in contributing to the economic and mental oppression that you're going through regarding debt. We're not trying to conquer your beliefs on anything else. Okay? So for that, I want to apologize. We don't get into the dogma. We don't get into the history, except 1977 when the consumer protection laws were enacted by the Congress. As the Bible says, whoever wrote it, I don't agree with everything in it. It's my choice. But the Bible does says have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them, which is what I'm doing now. Stay in your playpen. Please don't come into my habitat. I'm very territorial, very protective over what I have built, and that is a universal community. And I don't intend to let anyone tear that down or offend it go back to your small park and play around with those that deem you relevant. In the meantime, let all of us grow up and change the future. I'm done with that. All right, we have a great show for you. Put out my little prayer into the universe. And that is, we know that there is a war against the spirit of love and the spirit of care and the family structure. And we're here today and have someone who can speak quite eloquently on those issues. For everyone, civil war is first an internal war. And these are some of the things I just went over. A lot of us are experiencing internal war. A vicious enactment in the outside world of the inner conflict going on within many of us. We don't like people coming into our environment and providing doubts. No time to doubt your power. No time for holding back your cure. Everyone has a take in this world. Try to make it positive. A closed mind cannot be reasoned with. No matter how open-minded we believe we are, we all have various points of view that do not capture the larger picture. We can all be optimistic when things go well. For some of us, if you listen to them, nothing is going well. I mean, I get depressed when I listen to some of these people talk. Sky's going to fall. They're poisoning us. Can't take a bath. We can't drink water. Can't get a job. We're not supposed to work. Can't believe the Bible. Can't believe in religion. If you hear some of these people, you will absolutely want to jump off a bridge. Nonetheless, it takes courage to believe in yourself when things go rough. All hatred begins as self-hatred. I'm going to say that again. All hatred begins as self-hatred. I don't care what you say. Guilt prevents old wounds from healing and keeping them forever open. Whether it's the guilt of your family that you're caring for forward, let go of the guilt. Self-acceptance and self-love. I will continue to utter those words into the universe until transformation occurs. All right. I'm going to open up, let my team speak and address, and my guests should be here shortly. I want to welcome all of you again to Thor Radio, Free Your Mind Friday. Please participate. We're going to talk about, I chose a topic that, of course, again, my panel and my team kind of cringes when I step out in the middle of the water with these type of topics because, again, they invoke a great deal of emotion and sensitivity. They always tell me to tread light and err on the side of caution when dealing with these issues. But they also know I'm fearless. Can't help it. That's the lion. Can't help it. Everyone knows that I mean well. Most of all, the creator and the universe knows that I mean well, and everything I do from the heart. I'm not trying to offend anyone. And I'm neutral on most topics. And speaking of topics, we're going to talk today about what they term domestic violence. I think another form of domestic violence is when we see our kids, our family, our adults, when we have depictions of war on TV, abuse of power in politics, abuse of power in law enforcement. I think we have just become quite numb to abuse. I think the term abuse have been stretched beyond a reasonable definition. We're at the point in time where I know I grew up and there was an extension cord and a belt or stick or a heel of a shoe or a ring on a finger or a bat. Whatever was close, you were disciplined with that object. Talking back was not something you were comfortable doing. But we're dealing now with a different society, one that I feel is on our way to disaster, where there's been a clear separation and disconnect of family. And I feel it is and for the most part, it is supported by state and federal government programs and carefully constructed laws that makes it almost a crime to go to the bathroom these days, if you know what law is and what law isn't. I started off this show with talk of the women, how the women are being used in a way to subjugate the men, put them in the system. And I'm not advocating that this is solely being done by women, but we can't ignore the facts, and I think I provided some factual statistics to demonstrate that. We can't ignore the fact that there are more fatherless children these days, more divorces, more choices on different sexuality options, and all those things contribute to the disconnect and deterioration of the family structure. So we can't ignore that part of it. So we're dealing with the issue of domestic violence. Well, at least that's what it's termed, and that can include but not limited to verbal abuse, what they call verbal abuse, fear. You almost can't engage in a debate or difference of opinion. Some of the people that come on the show would probably be charged with domestic violence as being aggressive and assertive, threatening. You better look out for that. Just kidding. But we have definitely a war between masculinists and feminists. We have, in reality, a leaning or scale that favors the woman, whether it's in divorce, welfare, child support, birth control, abuse laws. There's a change in the environment. Some call it a feminist movement. Some call it it's time for the woman to be on top. Some call it, as they've done for years, men ain't sugar honey iced tea. I mean, you know, we can get into affectionate terms being reciprocated amongst many different trends of thoughts. But recently, if we're going to deal with violence, we have the Ray Rice issue, which came up recently. And the only reason why I feel it came up is due to the fact that he is a athlete. And I believe they use athletes as some form of adornment that we should have, because someone can play a sport or speak well, or, you know, society always places before us what they feel we should look up as idols, look to as idols, or celebrities. I beg to differ. But we have this issue going on. It's been in the news. People have been talking about it. People have been rendering their opinion. Men often are attacked regardless of what they say on that issue, other than not saying anything at all. I'm going to play with you a couple of YouTube videos on the topic. And we're going to get the opinion of both men and women on this issue. And we're going to have Arlen and Honor, who's going to be the front speaker on this topic, because I'm going to digress and I get in trouble. But I will say this, because I always try to share personal experiences and views that I'm aware of, and that is there is a blame for the men these days, and I think that is contributed to the fact that men are growing up fatherless. They're growing up with a disdain for women, be it their mother. Not that she wasn't a good mother, but maybe she just wasn't good in the sense that she didn't provide the men with a father throughout the duration of their childhood or later. I think the music is contributing, the negative connotation of women. I think the men, in my opinion, behavior has been the same throughout at least my tenure on this great earth. I don't see too much different in the behavior of men. Women terms it, deem it dogs, or I've heard that since I was a kid, since I could remember and knew how to understand what the word dog means. Grew up with four sisters, four brothers, so I know just about everything about how those views are. So things haven't changed much as far as men. Things are changing as far as women, and I'm not going to say that's positive or negative. I'm just stating the obvious that things are changing for whatever reason. So we have to address those issues and look at why men are violent. I think with the changes that are going on, the men need to take full awareness of this situation and make adjustments, whether it's adjustments to the stigma that they are dogs or they don't care. I really don't believe that, to be honest with you. I've always believed, and I will continue to believe, that the woman is a matriarch and she is the centerpiece of family. She controls the environment, the temperature, the vibration, and freedom. Everywhere she goes. I grew up in an environment where the women kept it together. the women controlled, for the most part, the positive flow of the family. Men were robotic. They worked. They came home. You feed them, keep the house clean, and they were good. They may have personal habits. They might have gambled. They may stay out too late. Some of them didn't. But that's pretty much how it's always been. And it's changing now because I think the government provides so many vehicles for which the woman can disconnect, and they give her supplements and welfare and a cell phone and a program and this and that, all in efforts to separate her and the kids from the man, creating a fictitious independence that often breeds hate or discontent or disrespect for the men further because they're no longer in the same environment. And they place all these women in a, what you call a Section 8 or one environment where all of them are feeding off of each other. And this is what we're dealing with. Now, that's not all women and it's not all men. Whether you're separated and you're living in Beverly Hills or Hollywood, the effects are no different, in my opinion. You're separated. So we have men growing up, and we have the issue of domestic violence. And we've seen this over the course of years, seen the definition change of domestic violence to where, again, if your wife or your woman gained a little weight and you said, honey, you're a little bit chunky, there's some therapist and so-called TV psychologist and counselors that would deem that to be abuse because you were being real. And that's what we're coming to where men almost don't want to open their mouth. So all of these things are going on at once. Men are growing up with, boys are growing up without their fathers. They have a discontent. They're expressing that discontent through their music. And then on the other hand, I feel the women are also have their responsibility because they are procreating. And then I see a lot of articles, I'll be honest with you, men, you should be more disciplined in your sexual participation. But women, you have to understand that you are the only one that can have a child. And with the luxuries that our states and governments offer, such as welfare and Section 8 and WIC and programs and abortion and overnight pill or whatever you want to call it, I think it has caused our women to be a little bit more promiscuous, a little bit more reckless, or not thinking in their right mind. There's a lot of pressure on them by trying to raise a family by themselves, which some women will think that it's possible. I tend to disagree. I think if you have to do it, you have to do it. But I don't think possible. I think it's supposed to be done by both. As I've said before, the Bible mentions the widow and the fatherless 44 times and mentions motherless once, in my belief. So we have to address those issues. We have to see what's the problem, what is going on. We have to see how we can fix it. We have to see how we can bring man and woman back together. So the Ray Lewis issue I'm going to play, and I hope my guest is here. If you are, just press 1, Mr. Honor. I don't see the number by which you called me from yesterday, so maybe you're calling in from another number. Just make sure you press 1. I'm going to play these two videos, and then we're going to jump right into the topic and subject matter. Excuse us if there's some profanity in it. I don't think it is much, but we're going to address first the Stephen Smith comments, and he's a sports commentator. I forget on which news station Stephen A. Smith. I like him. He's a very knowledgeable sports analyst. And again, we're seeing in the culture of media that it's so fragile these days, which is why I think a lot of men have a problem with me, because I'm pretty much, I'm cement on certain things. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to do it respectfully. I'm going to stand my ground. And I don't waver. And I'll probably be the one that wouldn't be good for mainstream media. But Stephen A. Smith made some comments, and, you know, our society is changing, so anything you say about a woman is always going to be criticized, or at least exacerbated for purposes of propaganda. But we're going to play Mr. Rice's comments, and then I'm going to bring Layla and Lori in to, and Rudy, to read the bio on Lynn and Honor, and let's get into it. So this skit is 12 minutes, and we're going to be right back after.
Welcome to the Advice Show, media with a common sense approach. So Stephen A. Smith was recently suspended from ESPN's First Take from comments that he made about the Ray Rice altercation he had with his fiance at the time. Now, anybody don't know nothing about that. Ray Rice, his fiance, got into an altercation. He ended up, you know, pushing her down. She ended up being knocked out, and he was discussing that, but what he said in his particular opinion caused a lot of uproar about domestic violence and women. Let me go roll the clip.
About you, and here's what I mean by that. We keep talking about the guys. We know you have no business putting your hands on a woman. I don't know how many times I got to reiterate that. But as a man who was raised by women, see, I know what I'm going to do if somebody touches a female member of my family. I know what I'm going to do. I know what my boys are going to do. I know what I'm going to have to remind myself that I work for the worldwide leader. I'm going to have to get law enforcement officials involved because of what I'm going to be tempted to do. But what I've tried to employ the female members of my family, some of whom you all met and talked to and what have you, is that, again, and this is what I've done this all my life, let's make sure we don't do anything to provoke wrong actions. Because if I come, or somebody else come, whether it's law enforcement officials, your brother, or the fellas that you know, if we come after somebody has put their hands on you, it doesn't negate the fact that they already put their hands on you. So let's try to make sure that we can do our part in making sure that that doesn't happen. Now, you got some dudes that are just horrible, and they're going to do it anyway. And there's never an excuse to put your hands on a woman. But domestic violence or you know, with or whatever the case may be, with men putting their hands on women, is obviously a very real, real issue in our society. And I think that just talking about what guys shouldn't do, we got to also make sure that you can do your part to do whatever you can do to make to try to make sure it doesn't happen. We know they're wrong. We know they're criminal. We know they probably deserve to be in jail. In Ray Rice's case, he probably deserves more than the 2-game suspension, which we both acknowledged. But at the same time, we also have to make sure that we learn as much as we can about elements of provocation. Not that there's real provocation, but the elements of provocation, you got to make sure that you address it, because what we've got to do is do what we can to try to prevent the situations from happening in any way. And I don't think that's broached enough, is all I'm saying. No.
Now, I listened to Stephen A. Smith's comments about 3 times before I made this video, so I can give a proper opinion about it. The first thing that I heard, he did not support domestic violence at all. He said many times that he doesn't support, or men should not hit women. He even stated that if a woman, his family is hit by a man, they're going to deal with it. That's what he said. But what got him in trouble was when he said you should do stuff to prevent, you know, these kind of reactions. In other words, you shouldn't provoke somebody to hit you. And him saying that, you know, is at least along the fact that, well, you're the cause of getting beaten. And that's what they focusing on. All these, some of these women is coming out all outraged about what he said. Okay? And I know what he meant about the situation, because what he said, maybe he meant like, you know, they got situations where men are beat up by women. They hit about 10, 12, 15 times. And then from the moment a guy hit her back in her face, or all of a sudden he's wrong. And that's, you know, something that, you know, happens all the time. A lot of women in America think they can just hit a man for any reason. You know, if he says something to her she don't like, she could hit him, she could slap him. How, even in the movies, it's promoted that a woman could slap a man in the face and he can't do nothing about it at all. And I tell women of today, don't you hit these guys today, because they would knock you right in your mouth. They're not playing with you no more. They're not the old school guys that's going to let you get away with that stuff. I even tell my own daughters, and I'm a father, I say, don't you put your hand on no man for no reason unless you're defending yourself in self-defense, because you can't win a physical fight with a guy. But what he said and what he meant a lot of times, it just get misconstrued, and I understand that. Because doing these videos, I say one thing, and people take it another way. And I know what I meant when I said it. So you got to sometimes really think on how you're going to express yourself on a particular video, because people take it certain ways. Then you have the politically correct crowd. If you don't say it a certain way, and you're hurting people's feelings, and they start crying, and they start trying to get you fired from your job, and, you know, this man got to support his family, and he's just giving his opinion on a situation. That's it. Stephen A. Smith's opinion.
Thanks for taking your time out to come out and just hear me out for a little bit. I had many nights and many days and a lot of time to reflect on, you know, a lot of things. And I usually prepare my speeches just coming off the top. But during the time I had a chance to jot a lot of things down. And just a little bit, I just want to first off apologize to, you know, Steve Bisciotti, Ivy Newsom, and Coach Harbaugh. Yeah, and also want to apologize to my fans. To the kids, to everyone who was affected, you know, by this situation that me and my wife were in. And throughout this time, you know, we really had a time to, you know, reflect on each other. And, you know, one thing that we were blessed to work it out together. And though we know any relationship is perfect, you know, but me and Janae together, you know, what counseling has done for us, you know, we want the world to see that it definitely did help us out. And, you know, I pride myself on, you know, my job is a very prideful job, the NFL, and I'm blessed to be playing at the highest level of sports. But the job that I did was more than scoring touchdowns. You know, it was getting out into the community. It was helping out. So when all of you seen this come upon, you know, this thing happened with me and my wife, you know, everybody questioned, you know, what happened. And, you know, one thing I can say is that, you know, sometimes in life you will fail, you know, but I won't call myself a failure. Failure is not getting knocked down. It's not getting up. And, you know, just want to hit on everything. And, you know, failure's not getting knocked down. It's not getting up. But I know many of my supporters, sponsors who have, you know, acted as so to, you know, not want to be, you know, in partnership with me. You know, that's my fault. That's my fault. I take full responsibility for that. And, you know, one thing that I do know is that I am working every day to be a better father, a better husband, you know, and just a better role model. And, you know, my daughter left the room, and you know, the best thing I have to do is be a role model for her throughout everything. And, you know, my wife is here, and I just want to thank her for loving me where I was weak and building up where I was strong throughout this whole situation. And lastly, I wanted to... Lastly, I just wanted to look at you all in the room who've covered me over the last 7 years, six going on 7 years. And for everybody here, you know, I want you to know that, you know, I'm still the Ray Rice that you, you know or used to know or grown to love. You know, I'm still the same guy, you know, and as me and Janae wish we could take back 30 seconds of our life, we definitely sit here today and tell you that, you know, we are better parents, we are better lovers, and we're also better friends throughout the situation. And as our family sit here today, you know, we want to just thank you for encouraging us. Mom, thank you. Mr. Palmer, my father I never had, thank you. For teaching me what it is to be a man. And, you know, I know it wasn't easy when you seen everything that happened, but I just remember your words, you know, you'll get through it. And those words always stick with me deeper than anything that I can imagine, because one thing you gave me was trust. And we're working on our relationship, but one thing you have to trust me is that, you know, I have Janae's best interest. And just want to thank all my supporters for the very kind times of notes or whatever you sent. I just want to thank you all for taking the time out to, you know, even reach out. You know, I want to personally thank our counselor, you know, Dr. Paul Ball, and I want to personally thank, you know, our team chaplain, Johnny Shelton, who's here today, for ministering us during this time and showing us a different way of, you know, because coping alone was definitely, you know, not easy. But bringing us together, times of fellowship, really made things a lot better for us. You know, every day wasn't easy, but through all things, you know, we were able to get through this. And, you know, and there was a lot of tears shed, but me and Janae can truly say that, you know, we're in a better place. And we just hopefully all one day gain back everyone's trust to let y'all know that, you know, we're still the same people. And I'm still the same person. And, you know, I really treat my job as a very special job. And, you know, I failed miserably, but I wouldn't call myself a failure because I'm working my way back up. And, I think my wife has something to say. I don't want to be the only one who, you know, we were in this together. So, Janae, you got something?
Yes. First, I want to say thank you for all of those who have supported us throughout this situation. I do deeply regret the role that I played in the incident that night. But I can say that I am happy that we continue to work through it together. And we are continuing to strengthen our relationship and our marriage and do what we have to do for not only ourselves collectively, but individually, and working on being better parents for Raven and continue to be good role models for the community like we were doing before this. I love Ray, and I know he will continue to prove himself to not only you all, but the community, and I know he will gain your respect back in due time. So thank you, guys.
All right. Appreciate everyone's patience. That was two videos, one. Just a commentator that was discussing his opinion on the Ray Rice issue. Just his opinion is not necessarily Thor's opinion or Brother Sharif's or anyone else on this panel. I'm playing videos for entertainment and informational purposes just to give you an idea on different views. I have my guest in, and I appreciate him waiting patiently. I want to say a couple of things just to start the topic off. And I'll just make a couple of comments. I listened to the first gentleman, and you know, I can understand where he's coming from when talking about violence. You know, nobody here on this show, including myself, advocates any type of violence or what they call domestic violence. I don't think adults or kids or anyone else should be engaged in hurting each other physically. However, we do see this on TV. We see police officers shooting down kids. We see people getting dragged. We see abuse from a political standpoint. We see war all the time. We see kids being killed. We see disease and famine. So we're looking at violence. Our country was built on violence. So I don't know how you can compartmentalize certain aspects of it, but I'll say these three things, and I want to get to my guest. I believe a victim is one who initiates any type of fight. I believe anything happens after you initiate a fight. I believe the victim doesn't change. I do believe there should be discipline and someone should walk away and somebody should avoid any physical violence by all means. But I think if you're the one who hits someone, I don't think you get a pass because of your gender. Okay? I think that by far there are different genetic makeup to male and female. And I think what we're seeing is a great deal of disrespect of men from women and of women from men. And we're dealing with that today, and we have someone that's going to address that. I'm going to address right quick the role model issue. I talked about this last week. I don't know what kind of society we are in when men allow their kids to have role models other than themselves. They're wearing T-shirts. They have pictures on their bed. You can walk into most men's house today, and they don't have a picture of themselves up. They don't. Their kids doesn't wear pictures of them. Of them, the fathers. Even fathers walking around wearing pictures of other men. That's one issue I got a problem with because I don't think it's any man better than myself. If your woman or your wife or your kids can't wear a picture of you on a T-shirt, then why the heck are you letting them look to a role model? Mr. Ray Rice doesn't owe me anything. He's not a role model. He don't have to go on TV and apologize to me. Okay. Because I don't look at him as a role model. Next, I think the whole apology thing was staged for TV, okay? I believe that's their personal problems, and they should deal with it as such. I don't know who started it, and this is where we talk about hearsay versus facts. I don't know who started it. I looked at the video. Y'all seen it. I posted it for you. It looks like he hit her. It looks like she launched at him. I don't know if she hit him. I don't know what went on before that time. I don't know. I did see him hit her, and that did not look good at all. And that video is always going to not look good, okay? But I did see her lunge at him and either hit him or I heard she spit on him. I don't know. All of this is hearsay, and they're not here to defend themselves. I have to say that. So everything we're saying now is speculative, all right? I noticed that he said the father he never had, which is the issues I'm talking about. He never had a father, okay? Our brother Lennon is going to deal with that. He said the wife, they were in it together. I noticed that. She didn't take much blame, okay, because I think dealing with these issues the way we deal with it now, I think it's always the man's fault, okay? So we're going to deal with those issues. Right quick, Layla, if you would just read the bio in, like, fast time. I want to get my guests in before he gets hemorrhoids. I want to get him in. Let's get started. So if you would read right quick his bio for our listener.
All right. Greetings, Thor family. We have our distinguished guest, Lennon Honor. He is a writer, musician, video producer, talk show host, and counselor. His website is Lennon, www.lennonhonor.com, and he's provided a wealth of information and inspiration in regards to manhood, fatherhood, marriage, children, family, and personal growth. He's written four books. The first book, Writings for the Father of the World of Tomorrow, which was written to inspire current and future parents and to encourage healthy relationships between fathers and sons. The second book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness, delves deep into metaphysics, spirituality, and consciousness. The third book, The 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, reveals how mass media has turned the trauma of September 9/11, September, which is 9/11, 2001, into a tool of psychological warfare. In his fourth book titled 360 Inspirational Quotes is a wonderful resource for anyone who is actively pursuing their own personal growth and development. Now, Lennon Honor has produced 8 major documentaries to date. Film topics range from spirituality, religion, media manipulation, mind control, subliminal manipulation, transhumanism, the occult politics, the entertainment industry, amongst other salient topics. As a musician, he has produced 5 albums of music and has performed in the U.S. and abroad. Lennon Honor is also working on several other projects, including his next book, Visions of Manhood, A Fatherless Boy Becomes a Man. In this book, he will be sharing his journey from being a fatherless boy to becoming an honorable man. Lennon Honor and his wife have been married for 13 years and have 5 beautiful children. And I just want to say that I had an opportunity to listen to some of his music. He's a flutist, for which I used to be a flutist, and he's inspiring me to want to pick that flute back up again. Beautiful music. Back to you, Brother Sharif.
Thank you, Layla. So you want to welcome? We want to welcome our brother, Brother Lennon Honor. Welcome to Thor Radio Network. Thank you for your patience. Pleased to have you. Let's do a sound check and make sure that you are in.
Yes, Brother Sharif. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir, loud and clear. Great.
All right. Thanks so much for having me, brother. And thank Sister Layla for taking the time to read the bio, and I encourage her to practice that flute. I need to encourage myself to do the same.
Great. Well, brother, I know I tried to shorten it up, but I had to address some issues, but I know I said a mouthful, and I know you were chomping at the bit to get in there and try to catch everything. I know you probably have some notes, but you are our lead panelist today, and the topics that we've been discussing in this 4-part series has all been up your alley, so to speak. And we want you to just dive in and navigate this information. I'm going to digress because my team told me to get in and get out and shut up before I get to run in my mouth. So I'm going to digress. I'm going to let you steer. And I urge my panel, Lori and Layla and Rudy, I have a ordained minister on the line. She deals with domestic violence. And she deals with our youth and certain criminal and counselor type setting. So she's also experienced in this particular topic. She's well spoken. So I'm going to digress and let them come in and let you go ahead and give your opinions and views and professional outlook on this issue of domestic violence and rape.
Yes, and I should start just by giving a little bit of background. As Layla had indicated, I am a husband and father, and my wife and I, we've been in a relationship, a positive relationship, for 13 years now, and we have 5 beautiful children. The issue of domestic violence has never been an issue that has occurred in my home, and that's something that as a husband and father I pride myself on. However, in my childhood, domestic violence was something that I experienced throughout my early childhood. Up until the age of 13, when my father by that time was on crack, and he was expelled from the home. And then from the age of 13 on, I grew up without a father. But even while he was in the home, he was a very destructive force, very abusive to my mother. So in that sense, my expertise, and in point of fact, my opinion is based upon personal experience and understanding this dynamic of male-female relationships and the value and importance of establishing positive male-female relationships, which is something that I have been able to do despite the fact that I was put in a very disadvantaged position growing up as a child. One of the things that you brought up, brother, in terms of Ray Rice was that he did mention that he grew up without a father. And the thing that I take from that is that that is something that is totally irrelevant when one is seeking to explain away why one had engaged in a form of domestic violence. And what I mean by that is that we cannot afford as men to make excuses, especially when we have come of age, as to why it is, or potentially why it is, that we may have done things that have been quite destructive. And the reason why I'm saying that is because it sets a poor precedence for other males. Now, the other thing you said, too, was that Ray Rice is not a role model and should not be perceived as a role model, and this is absolutely true. The other thing is that we tend to, especially amongst African Americans, we tend to place the athlete and the entertainer into a position of high esteem. And therefore, we assume that these role models are all honorable, that they're all mature, that they are respecters of women, if you will. This is simply not true. And point of fact, within NFL, there is a culture. It's really a culture of abuse. And when I say abuse, I'm saying abuse on many levels, including the abuse of self. And I think that when we put athletes and entertainers and we use them as role models, it becomes no surprise that when things like this take place, the perceived role model may, in some cases, seek to make excuses, and these excuses become the justification by the masses as to why particular behavior patterns can continue to persist amongst the masses, meaning within the context of male-female relationships, even if these particular behavior patterns are destructive. So I think that that's also another important point, this issue of role models and how oftentimes we place these athletes and entertainers in high esteem, and then in the process we hold them to a certain standard, and in many cases we hold them to a particular standard, but in terms of our own lives we hold ourselves to a much lesser standard. And so therefore when they do things that are destructive, it legitimizes us doing things destructive, if that makes sense. Two other points that you brought up I just want to speak on. You had also said that this issue of, you know, if a woman hits a man, you know, how should a man react? And one of the major challenges that we have, and this is in general, this is just male-female relationships in general, but we can also say amongst African-Americans, I tend not to focus specifically on any group of people in my work, but since we're talking about Ray Rice, there is a racial component to this in terms of particular stereotypes that are projected about males who we would classify as African-Americans. But this issue of, women hitting men or even a man hitting a woman, I think that this is the approach that we tend to have when it comes to domestic violence, the approach that we tend to have when there is a divorce, the approach that we tend to have when there are custody issues or custody battles, the approach that we tend to have when there are issues about child support, indeed, the approach that we tend to have when it comes to issues like a woman's right to choose, the approach is somewhat backward. And the reason why I say that is because we tend to look at the symptoms of the greater problem without addressing the greater problem. In other words, the source of these issues comes down to one very simple thing. And really, it's two things, but they're very much connected. And the most important thing has to do with positive male-female relationships, which come out of, and this is the other thing, which come out of healthy families and healthy family institutions. And in the absence of these two things, the symptomatic, if you will, symptomatic reactions become these issues. For instance, divorce, domestic violence, abandonment of children, different levels of abuse within the home, et cetera. When you're in a positive relationship, and see, a lot of us, we're not used to that. We didn't see it when we were growing up. We didn't see our parents in positive relationships. We didn't see a man really loving a woman and a woman really loving a man and a man really taking care of a woman and a woman really taking care of the man. And they have a collective goal. They are married in consciousness. We don't see that. So for many of us, this notion of a positive relationship or a healthy family institution has become so foreign that instead of focusing on that central issue, which is an issue that if you can establish a positive relationship and a healthy family institution, you alleviate or eliminate the symptoms that we see in greater society as it relates to issues of abandonment, spousal abuse, as it relates to, quote-unquote, domestic violence, so forth and so on. So what I mean by this is that the approach at some point is going to need to shift when people are addressing these types of topics, because the solution isn't simply to talk about the topics. The solution is to assist people in establishing positive male-female relationships in healthy family institutions. So I want to make that point here. One of the things you will find that when you are in a positive relationship, there is no abuse. You see what I'm saying? If we approach this, the importance of establishing positive relationship and preparing our boys to be honorable men so they can function properly within a positive relationship, then therefore we will eliminate a lot of the social ills or domestic ills that people face day to day. If we prepare our daughters to be honorable women, if we prepare our daughters for motherhood, If we give them the tools that they will need to be able to function within a positive relationship, then we will eliminate a lot of those ills as well. The problem is that we do not prepare our children. We were not prepared as children. See, it's one thing to want to be in a positive relationship. It's another thing to be prepared for one, and we are simply not prepared. And therefore, the symptoms that come out of this lack of preparedness, I'm not surprised by it at all. And it can be passed down from one generation to the next. But just as it can be passed down, it can also be stopped. The cycle of abuse can be stopped. And I'm speaking of this from personal experience. How is it that a young boy whose father was extremely abusive, not only to his mother, and when I say extremely abusive, I express this in graphic detail inside of my forthcoming book, not only abusive to his mother, meaning the boy's mother, but also abusive to his children on many different levels, an alcoholic, irresponsible, ultra-emotional, quick to anger, quick to physical violence, also a drug addict, always high on marijuana, always alleviated, drunk on that 40-ounce, that malt liquor. A lot of people don't even know what that is nowadays, but when I was coming up, that's what the King Cobra. A lot of people don't know what that is either, but when I was coming up, okay. How is it that a boy who grew up in poverty, who grew up on government cheese, you see, who grew up on food stamps, all in the midst of having this negative representation of what it means to be a man, a father who, in point of fact, began to get into crack and begin to steal from the home and begin to put his family through this vicious cycle of abuse. How does this young boy transcend all of that and create his own family? Is not abusive to his wife, does not abandon his children, does not abuse his children in any way, verbally, physically, emotionally, who is an upstanding man, meaning that he stands up for what is right for his family and for society at large. How does a boy go from that to becoming someone who will not only conceive of a child, but also deliver his children with his own hands? Ah, you see, what I'm getting at here, brothers and sisters, is that the standard that we set for what it means to be a man, and the standard that we set for what it means to be a woman, the standard that we set for what it means to be in a positive relationship, the standard that we set for what it means to be in a healthy family institution has been so degraded, but it is always based upon a lack of preparation. We simply are not prepared to be honorable men. We are not prepared to be fathers to our, and we have to become prepared. Someone must teach us these things. So I think that this is another dynamic that people have to look at, because irrespective of what we experience in our childhood, it doesn't legitimize us being abusive later on in life. It doesn't mean that we may not be challenged in particular ways, quick to anger, so forth and so on. I understand that. But what I'm saying is that we have to raise the bar and we have to raise the standard, and we cannot simply say that because someone did not have a father that this is the reason why they are the way that they are. No, we can all transcend that paradigm. I've been through it. It's not easy, but it's possible, and that should be the bar that we set, okay? So I want to speak on that in terms of the topic that you brought up, not only about Ray Rice not having a father, but then also this issue of, you know, who hits who first. It's an irrelevant issue. The issue is positive male-female relationships. The issue is healthy family institutions. The issue is respect for human life. When you respect human life, in order to do that, you have to respect your own life in the first place. But we're not taught that either, to value ourselves. When we do not value ourselves, we will not value other people. And then the likelihood of us doing some level of damage onto some, what sense does it make for a grown person to be hitting on anybody anyway? You see, that's the lack of preparation, a lack of maturity. And so maturity comes through a process. And we are instructed properly as to what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a loving and caring being? What does it mean to be an adult? And we lack that particular preparation. What my wife and I are doing, we're seeking to help other people in the process. What we're seeking to do with our own children is to raise them accordingly so that by the time my son is 17 or 18, he will be functioning like a man, which took me to the age of about 29. It's perfectly doable. And again, I can't make excuses. I could sit up here and say, well, my father was a crackhead, and that's why I can go and I can abuse my wife, or I can be absent in my children's life, or that's why I smoke marijuana, or that's why I drink alcohol. I've never done any alcohol, never done any drugs, never smoked any marijuana. Why? Because I always had a commitment that someday when I had my family, my wife was not going to experience what my mother experienced. And so I went through this preparation process. You see, I began to think differently. I prepared myself every single day to become what I am, and I'm still becoming something greater each day. This is the standard that we must begin to set, not only for young males, but then also in terms of for young females and their perception of what's possible in a man for them. We simply do not prepare our children properly because we were not prepared, but we cannot use a lack of preparedness as an excuse as to why we do things that are destructive. One other thing I wanted to point out that you brought up, too, was the apology that Ray Rice gave. And you said that the apology was staged for television. Absolutely. It's called damage control. And this happens all the time. But then, again, this is all on this pretense that somehow Ray Rice is a role model. Why would we, you know, come to believe that he's a role model? Because he's an athlete? Because he may have been an entertainer? See, again, the main role model for any child should be the parent or parents. And we tend to do this. We tend to externalize this responsibility, and part of the reason why we tend to externalize this responsibility is because we were not prepared ourselves to be adequate role models. See, it's all about preparation. It's not about the symptoms, and we can talk about the symptoms. And I have very strong views on the issue of domestic violence, being someone who experienced that firsthand in terms of my own childhood experience. However, I think that the issue of male-female relationships and healthy family institutions and raising boys into men properly is the actual solution. The apology was staged for television. This happens all the time. I remember when Tiger Woods has this issue. He has this press release situation taking place, and they have all these people come, and the cameras come out, and it's totally staged. At the end, he goes and hugs his mother. Politicians do the same thing. But why do we consider him to be a role model in the first place? That's the issue. See, in the absence of honorable men in the home, we begin to look for someone to identify with as young males, you see. For many African-American males, during my generation, we, in the absence of having honorable men in the home, we looked to rap artists. And in particular, for those of us who grew up on the West Coast, at a particular, depending on what year you were coming up in, we looked to gangster rappers. You see the problem here. See, but when you have an honorable man in the home, which is possible for everyone, that honorable man being prepared, that honorable man taking the time to improve upon his thoughts, his words, and his actions day by day to become what he has become, the boys do not look for some external force or some external source of, you know, to aspire towards. They see it in their own father. My sons see it in me every single day. Very important point to make here. Getting back to this, and this would be the last point, and if there's any questions, please feel free to ask, or any contentions, we can go there too. But the public apology that was issued by Ray Rice, it was just damage control, and they call this public relations, PR. This happens all the time. But it doesn't dissolve the truth that he is an abusive man. Here's the other thing. See, it's not just the physical abuse. I am quite sure that there are other levels of abuse because a man does not go simply to physical violence against a woman without having other levels of violence, lesser levels of violence, being actualized prior to that. That can be verbal abuse. That can be emotional abuse. That can also be sexual abuse. Okay, so that's another dynamic I think that is troubling here, and that is that because this is a high-profile case and because it has more to do with physical violence, people tend to negate all the other levels of violence. And then now all of a sudden, many people all of a sudden, they care about women. They care about women's rights. They want women to be protected, not considering the fact that there are so many other levels of abuse and people didn't tend to care before. In point of fact, when you turn on the television, you watch all the sexist content, that's abusive too, but we'll watch that and that's okay. But let some high-profile athlete hit someone and get it, and as long as it's on camera and we can see it, now we care. That's a problem too. That's a lack of preparation. It's disingenuous for people to act like they care. Just like it's disingenuous, that's just like someone being disingenuous about acting like they care about my mama getting beat on back in the day. Because it was recorded, but then they don't look at all the other levels of abuse that she experienced or all the other levels of abuse that women experience day by day. That when you turn on that TV and you watch the rap video and you see the half-naked women and the men calling them bitches and hoes, that's a form of abuse too. So why don't we invest in dealing with those types of issues too so that we can recognize and get a broader perspective as to what this abuse issue is and understand that the source of it all goes back to a lack of preparation. in particular, raising boys into men, proper men, honorable men, preparing them to be fathers, preparing them to be protective forces. When you prepare them to be protective forces, they do not engage in destructive behavior, whether that's physical abuse, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, sexual abuse, etc. So this is another topic I think that we should probably delve into, that there are many different levels of abuse. And why is it that we take a certain level of abuse that may be on a higher level and use that as a focal point and then negate the fact that there are all these other levels? And many of the people who are engaged in this particular level, this higher level, and trying to, and in some cases, the people who are seeking to stand up for women, they engage in these other lesser levels day by day, but we don't want to talk about that. I think that that's another aspect to look at, because it speaks to a level of hypocrisy, and it is the result of a lack of preparation, a lack of appreciation for life, a lack of appreciation for women. And we can also flip it around in terms of men being abused too, but I want men to understand that the issue is not abuse. The issue is a lack of preparation. And I will say this, and it will be quite controversial, but I'm going to say this will be my last point here. Some people may say that it's sexist, but I'm saying this from personal experience, that most women who are in their right mind, they will go along with a man as long as he is honorable. Key word, honorable, and you got to know what that means. So what I'm saying is that under normal circumstances, if the man is operating as an honorable man day by day, again, what does that mean? If he's operating as an honorable man, that a woman who is in her right mind will go along with him, and there will be very little resistance, and there will be very little problems, and there will be very little in the way of conflict, and then they will begin to work together as a team towards a codified goal. In the absence of a man operating as an honorable man, and of course, a woman who perhaps is not in her right mind, you will begin to see the same types of symptoms that we see in the case of Ray Rice and all across the board in terms of a lot of the entertainers and a lot of the athletes that come up on, and have these particular types of experiences. These are just symptoms. I'm going to say it one more time. I know it's controversial, but I'm saying this from personal experience, that if a man is operating as an honorable man day by day, he is loving, he is caring, he is responsible, he is committed, not only to his wife, but to his children. He is not bringing the drama into her life. In point of fact, he does whatever he can to protect the woman for the drama, even from the drama, even when people are trying to bring drama from the outside in. He is the front line of defense for his wife and for his family. When he is operating honorably, most women who are in their right mind, well, all women who are in their right mind, will go along. And they will be able to begin to build something together. And the same thing applies. If a woman is honorable, she cares and loves the man, she is committed to him, she's committed to raising this family with him, she is operating honorably day by day, that means that how she speaks to men and how she speaks about men, she is clear that she must hold a level of appreciation for men, appreciation for males, so long as they are honorable too. When a woman is functioning to this degree, a man will go along. And that is the foundation of a positive male-female relationship, and a positive male-female relationship is the foundation of a healthy family institution. I know I said it was going to be one more thing, but there is one other thing, and this is something that I've noticed a lot when people begin to talk about the male and female dynamic. They tend to be exclusive. In other words, they will exclude males from females, and they see men as being existing outside of women and women existing outside of men. We have to stop doing that. It's totally destructive. I call this the male versus female war imprint program. Let me say it again. It is what I call the male versus female war imprint program, wherein we perceive that somehow we are opposite of each other. That's why we say things like opposite sex. Opposite implies opposition. Opposition implies war. Now we're getting into the war. Male versus female. He did this. She did that. See, there's a lack of collectivity, if you will. This is a major problem, too, when we talk about male-female relationships. Oftentimes, when I hear people talk about male-female relationships, they divide men from women, not realizing that you must approach male-female relationships holistically. And the main reason why we tend not to do that is because we're not prepared for that. Because most of our life, we have seen the division amongst men and women, and we have seen dysfunctional male-female relationships, broken families. Well, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, even for those of us who have experienced that, myself included, we should not hold that as being the model. We have to become inclusive that if I do something, it's going to affect my wife. If my wife does something, it's going to affect me. If I'm successful in one area of my life, she is also successful in that area. It's collective. If I'm making a certain amount of money, she's making that certain amount of money too. It's not about who is in power, who is in control, who's making the most. This is all silliness. It is childish. It is a lack of preparation, a lack of maturity that would even have us thinking on those lines. I think we need to be very careful about that, that we not get to the point to where we continue to separate men from women and try to and approach male-female relationships with this wedge in between men and women. Male-female relationships, positive, healthy family institutions, is the most natural thing that should be occurring on earth. But the reason why it is not occurring as much as it should is because we are not prepared for these things. And part of the preparation is for us to develop a level of mental aptitude to where, and we can look at male-female relationships, not from an emotional standpoint, but rather from one of the intellect, wherein we can think critically, and we can also solve problems that may occur. In this sense, it is important that we restructure how we perceive male-female relationships. And when we do this, you will see that things will begin to change, and also the symptoms that so many people experience and have become so normalized and have become standardized will no longer exist. And in this sense, this is the solution.
Whoa. All right. I'm going to digress for a minute. I'm going to sit back for a minute and let the women come forth. Rudy, introduce yourself to Brother Honor, and give us your take. I know you have to leave in about an hour, but give us your take on domestic violence, on the Ray Rice, and on his monologue, if you would.
Well, he had a lot to say. First of all, I'd like to welcome you to our program. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here, and welcome to Free Your Mind Friday. You covered a lot of things, and I kind of sat back and I just listened and I amened a little bit and shook my head, and things I'm going to totally agree with you. Because the first thing is my belief is that it's all about freedom and about choices. And I agree with you on getting prepared for life. I know that one of the things that people usually say, well, those who have been abused do abuse others. And so sometimes we see that people take that and they make excuses for their behavior. But I agree that people have to get prepared in life and not be a product of their environment necessarily, because it takes two to get into any type of situation. And someone at some point in time has to be the stronger individual to decide whether to stay in that relationship or leave that relationship for the betterment of themselves or their children if they have those, and even the betterment of the person that they're with if that when that person is an abuser. We should not make any excuses for our behavior because, like you said, behavior can be changed. We can grow out of certain things. Some of the things that you experience there are others who've experienced some of those things, and they didn't make the choice or get prepared changes like you did. You talked a little bit about the different types of abuses. Now, for some reason, like you said, the physical abuse seems to come to the top of the surface for some reason, because I guess you can see the abuse, the black and blue eyes, whatever, but there is the mental abuse, there is the spiritual abuse, which I tend to know a lot about, there is the spousal abuse. Right now, if you were to look at the situation that we're in today, all of those people who are going through debt situations are in abusive situations because we're being oppressed by our oppressor. Because of a lack of knowledge, because we haven't made the right choices and different things like that. Now, the other thing that we have to look at is who is abusing us and who are we allowing to abuse us? In our court system, we have the doctors, the lawyers, the preacher in the pulpit. Sometimes all of these people who are supposed to be correcting situations become abusers themselves because of either a lack of power that they never had and the sense that they can have power now and control people. In reference to the Ray Rice situation, I think that when you make the excuse that I didn't have a father, and I heard that in it, that's not an excuse. Or I didn't have a mother, that's not an excuse to be who you are or who you need to be or who you need to become. Because, again, within your own mind and making your own choices and making your own decisions, you don't have to be anything that you don't want to be, and you don't have to be anything in an environment where you saw somebody else abusing somebody else. So I agree wholeheartedly about making choices, being prepared, and coming out of various situations. I was brought up in a household where my father raised me. So I'm one girl with two brothers. And so I think very strongly, I suppose, in the same vein as my father would think. You can always pick yourself up. You can always do better. You don't have to be in an abusive situation. But a lot of times people basically, I think, get stuck in those situations feeling that they can't do any better, or for the sake of society or something like that, they have to stay in those particular situations. Back to Ray Rice. That young man, I believe the commentary obviously was staged because of his love for the sport or the publicity or whatever. I don't know if I necessarily believe that he's going to ever make a change. I listened carefully to him saying, I'm still the person that I was, and I thought, gee, that's not very good. Sometimes you can listen deeply to what a person says and realize that they have not made a change. I think, again, that he will probably be abusive again. We may not ever see it again, and it may not be physical, but I think that he is an abuser, and I don't think that he's going to change, and that's probably not a very good thing for me to say. But those are basically my comments right there.
All right. Well, that's the mother. I agree with everything she's speaking of there. That is true. I don't think Mr. Rice made any changes. I think this is all for show. I think just my gut feeling is that this is how they engage. They probably argue, they probably fight, they probably hit each other, and it's cool for them. You know, I see him protecting, which is what he talked about, his occupation. I've heard the wife has made comments that this is affecting my lifestyle. I'm going to let one more before you go, Mr. Honor. I'm going to bring in the other mother of the network. And Yama, you're there. I was in the chat, and Unique is in the chat, and Mr. Honor had said something that I guess touched her on one side. She said, yeah, Yama had said, we're all one. And that's what Brother Lennon was saying, that, you know, all this, you know, separate man and woman, we're all one. And when Unique said that, I said, you know what, that is exactly what Yama says. We're one. So, Yama, give your comments on what you've heard so far, which has been a great deal.
Yes.
And welcome, by
Shalom.
The way. Shalom.
Much respect for the guests today. Lennon Honor, much respect. And when I give people respect, then I can trust them. The words that you spoke and your upbringing, what happened to you with your dad and your mom in the home, and the abuse that went forth, and if you can, and you came out of that to be someone that can be trusted, that someone who can be respected, and that can lecture and speak to other people, then Rice, he has a way out. He doesn't have to stay in the situation that he's in. He has a way to get out of it. He has to hear statements of truth. Statements that's going to build him up, that's going to make him release all that anger and all that stress and all that humility and all that boyish ways of that he has. He doesn't have a man way. He wants to retaliate like he's on the playground, with whether it's male or female. He doesn't have that respect for the woman who produced him. He doesn't have that oneness. See, when you compliment each other, then you can be one. But when you are opposite, or I'm trying to think of the word you had said, when they say we're not opposite, but not the same, a man and a woman, not together. When you come together with truth, and you can respect one another. If you don't have any respect for yourself, you can't respect anyone else. And the men melanated men, black men, African American men, whatever they call us, they need their whole thinking pattern to be reversed, to be changed. A change has to come about. You have to get rid of the garbage and put in you what's beneficial, where you will have respect for yourself and respect for others. And raising a family, a man and a woman, you have to be one. You have to come together. The product that you produce, your children, shouldn't be what happened to you, and you're a witness to it, Leonard, Arna. You're a witness. It doesn't have to reflect on your children. And that's the main key, restoring our family, restoring our children, because then they're going to go out there and they're going to get mates, and they have to have the right thinking. They have to respect one another. They have to know that this is a friendly walk. This is not a hostile walk. It's friendship. It's caring. And I enjoyed you. I mean, if anyone knows this football player, I think you said Ray Rice. If anyone knows him and you're hearing this program, tell him to get in touch with Leonard Arnott so he can instill in him. He can put in him. He can get rid of all that anger and all that hatred for himself. He has self-hatred. He can get rid of all that. But there's always a way to escape, to bring you, to elevate you, to take you from a lower level to a high level. And you could do it, and you have to be one with your wife. You have to be one with the man. The man and the woman has to be one if they're together. They have to complement one another, not oppose one another, not to be opposite, to be on the same, to be on the same channel, the same frequency, the same vibration. You have to be there. And I, Leonard Arnott, I respect you, your background, where you came from. My father, he couldn't read and write. He just didn't. He went to a lower grade, and he never went to the third grade. So he didn't have those tools. But what tools he had was respect for his wife, and they were friends. And he trusted her. And she trusted him. And when we grew up in the Bronx, my household had everything it needed, and my father had his salary was less than other people, but he knew how to not leave his money outside the house. He brought it there. My mother did what she had to do, and we always had everything we wanted because they had that connection. They were one, and I appreciate that. I appreciate how you brought that out. And so I say much respect to you. Much respect, and I trust you're a person that can be trusted because your actions is how you move your life. So you can be trusted. I trust you, and I really enjoyed your what you contributed to this Thor ministry. I really enjoyed it, and you have to have an ear to hear and receive. And I received just what you said. It was beautiful, my brother. Beautiful.
All right. Well, Lennon, I'll just tell you this. I had two mothers on the phone that's, scaring the heck out of 70. I mean, they write up on it. If they breathe 70s, looking at them. And I never really have heard Yama trust someone so quickly.
Yeah.
She's very methodical in her trust. Her trust means her love. You won't hear her say love. When she say, I trust you, that is a form of love. She doesn't say love. She says, I trust you. And if you trust someone, you have to have an affinity for them. So you must have really done a great job in your monologue to get her to say that.
No, well, let me also just thank Yama for the kind words. I appreciate that. That's one thing that we can always use is the fortification from the elders. I appreciate you, and I respect you, and I love you, too.
Yes.
And also to Rudy, thank you so much. Brother, if you don't mind, there was a couple of points that the elders brought up that I would like to just take just a couple of minutes to address, if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that was said was how it's important to be one when you're raising your family. And my wife, we are very big on this. I should say this, too, that my wife and I, we've never argued, fussed, fight, none of that stuff from the beginning. I remember one time, I'm from San Diego, And one of my musician friends, I was in a band with him. One time I took my wife over to his place. This was early on, I think maybe 3 years into our relationship. My first son was born by that time. And we were talking, and I think his wife, it may have been him, but I think it was his wife said, "So what do you guys do when you argue?" And I looked at the wife, and I said, "Oh, ma'am, we don't argue." And then her husband goes, "Well, what do you mean you don't argue?" I said, we just never have." And they look at each other, and then the husband looks at me and says, "Well, that's not natural." And they had been together for what, about maybe 35, 40 years by that time. You know, what I'm getting at is that the way in which my wife we've dealt with each other throughout the years, we've always had this level of respect. We've always had this friendship, and we've always had an appreciation for each other. See, that's the thing, that when you come up through the muck and mire of life, you have to be appreciative when you're blessed with someone like my wife. In my case, when I was blessed with her, I had to be very appreciative, because what I saw growing up and what I experienced as I was growing up was so destructive and so negative that by the time my wife came into my life, I had to humble myself enough to be appreciative. And based upon that level of humility and that level of appreciation, I recognized that I would never argue, and there was no reason for us to argue. If we had a disagreement, then we talk about it. But we're not going to go back and forth and raise our voice. I've never raised my voice at my wife. I've never raised my voice at my daughters. I can't do that. Now, I may have raised my voice a little bit with my sons, but that's for teaching lessons. And it's not in a way to where I'm demeaning them or I'm making them feel less than, but just putting a little bit of bass in my voice to get my point across. But what I'm getting at is that it's important that we recognize that as men and women, when we're raising these babies, that we have to be one. And my wife and I, we call this the wholeness principle. The importance of this is, especially when you have babies, because you're going to be faced with some challenges, okay? And my wife and I, after 10 years of having children, we have five at this time, the oldest is 10 years old, we recognize that in order to raise these babies right, we have to be a team. You see, it's a prerequisite for raising your children right. You have to be on the same page, which gets back to the issue of positive male-female relationships, and out of that you can grow a healthy family institution. If you're not on the same page, if you're in opposition, if you're at war, your children will suffer as a result. And the degree to which you are at war and conflict, you don't appreciate each other, you don't love each other properly, you don't speak to each other in kind and loving tones, that's the degree to which your children will suffer. When you suffer in a relationship, it's not just you. It's the person that you're also in a relationship with, and also the children or the progeny that come out of that relationship, they too will suffer. So that's a very important point. You have to be one while you're raising your family. And brothers have to understand this too, that you got to be one with your wife. You should never see her as being outside of you. That is to say that when you are walking amongst the world, that you always walk as if she is right there next to you. So when that sister passes by that may be quote-unquote attractive, you don't turn back around and check her out. Uh-oh, here we go. Here we go. This is what I mean by the wholeness principle. I walk with my wife even when she's not walking next to me. This is the standard that we should set as men. This is the standard that I'm providing for my sons. They know this, and you can talk to my sons now. You can ask them. I can say, "Son, what are the differences between a boy and a man?" And they'll be able to give you at least four or five things right off the top. And if you continue to probe them, they'll give you even more, because I've given them the instruction to prepare them for manhood. There are differences between – one of the differences between boys and men is that a boy will cause problems. Men will solve problems. Uh-oh. For those sisters out there who were raised by good men, good fathers, you know this to be the case. Your father didn't cause problems. He solved problems. When there was an issue, you were able to bring the problem to him, and he would go through the process of helping you to solve the problem. In some cases, he'd step up to the plate and solve the problem altogether. I do this for my wife all the time. I want her to experience the best life experience that she can possibly experience, even if that means that I have to sacrifice some things, even if that means that I have to stay awake at night and think about things. Even if that means that I have to deal with extra stress that if I, you know, that I probably would not normally have to deal with, but because she's dealing with it, I want to take that from her so that she can live the best life that she can experience. Why? Because her life experience as a child was less than positive. It was horrible. And I recognize that. And I understand that because that was what I experienced, and therefore I recognize that part of being a man is doing whatever I could and continue to do whatever I can to this day and into the future so that the rest of my wife's life will be as blessed as it can be. See, and blessing her, I am blessed. That's the wholeness principle. See, and when you divide it, now you're saying, well, you're doing too much for her, and you a simp. This is the terminology that we get. And everyone who says these types of things, none of them are in a positive relationship. None of them saw an actual man functioning within the context of a healthy family institution in a positive relationship. I've had so many myths, oh, you simping. No, I'm operating like a man, and I know the difference between a boy and a man. Boys cause problems. Men solve problems. Okay? One other thing, too, that I want to point out that Yama had said was that it's important to have respect for women as men. And I want to say this because a lot of people miss out on this point. Men have to understand something, that you exist because of a woman's womb. And by virtue of this truth, there is a level of respect and a level of reverence that you must give to that which allows you to live. I'm saying that this is a basic principle that men must understand. Now, boys may not necessarily understand it, but I'm talking about if you want to ascend into the ranks of a man, and if an honorable man, you always recognize that women must be attributed a certain level of respect from the get-go, simply because they have a woman, they have the potential to duplicate life, and you don't have that. So in that sense, you must respect the womb in these regards. A lot of men can't understand this basic fundamental principle that you would not exist. Yeah, but, you know, and I have this too. I got to say it. Yeah, but men, we create too. No, you initialize. Simply because you ejaculated into a vagina doesn't mean that you created anything. You initialize a life process, but you do not necessarily create it physically. That's the woman's, she has the ability to do that. And the degree to which you participate in the creation of that life is directly related to the degree to which you support the woman during that process. You see, but you can't lay claim to the creative process if you are not contributing as a supportive force to the woman during those 9 months of pregnancy and during the birthing experience. So I want us to be very clear about this, that as when you step into the realm of men, you have to always afford a level of respect to women, irrespective of where they may be at in their life. And you have to have a level of reverence for the fact that they have the capacity to create life, because without their capacity to create life, you would not exist. And brothers, don't tell me that I exist because a man simply ejaculated into a vagina. Any man can do that. That's easy. That does not make you a man, and that does not make you a creative force, and it most definitely doesn't make you a father. It's much deeper than that. So I want to be very clear for you men out there. You always have to afford women with a certain level of respect and reverence simply because they have the capacity to create life, and without their womb, you would not exist. A woman carried you for 9 months, and she may not even have been the best mother, but the fact that she held you in the womb for those 9 months, you should have at least a level of respect for the feminine principle. Just a couple other things real quickly here in terms of what Rudy had said. And this is just one thing I just want to point out that was so very important. You don't have to be what you don't want to be. And this is so true, very wise. In other words, you can be something greater than what you are. And that's why when Ray Rice said something to the degree, I'm still the person that I was, well, what are you saying? What was the person that you were? You were the person who was abusive. You see, very interesting that dynamic in terms of the terminology. And as sister said, as the elder said, oftentimes you listen very carefully to what people say, what they say, and you really think about it. You realize that they're telling the truth. Okay, I have this other saying, too, in one of my books, that liars are not perfect, and they will tell the truth sometimes. Okay, so in this case, when Ray Rice was talking, he said, I'm still the man that I was. Well, what does that mean? And were you really a man in the first place? See, men, we do not hit women. That includes our own daughters. We do not abuse women. That includes our own daughters. We do not emotionally abuse. See, that's not what men do, because that's the creation of a problem. That's what boys do, and we have to begin to make this distinction. One of the reasons why, this will be the last point, one of the reasons why these types of distinctions are made is because we're not prepared adequately. And another reason why these types of distinctions are made, what are the differences between a boy and a man? It's because we did not really see a functional man in our lives, and what we saw was nothing more than a boy. I cannot, in our fathers, we saw a boy, and we took the boy in our father, or in some cases when they abandoned us, they still were operating like a boy, because a boy is never responsible for himself or for that which he creates or for his children. if he has children. Yes, there are old boys. A man, however, is responsible for himself. He is responsible for his children. He is responsible for his family unit. And there's a difference between the two. One of the reasons why we tend not to make this clear, the clear distinctions that must be made is, and one, we don't have a rites of passage, but the other thing is that we did not see an example. Most of us men who are listening to this, we did not see an adequate example of how a man functions within the context of a family institution, how a man functions within the context of a healthy family institution and a positive male-female relationship. In the absence of seeing that as a role model, we begin to look to other things. We look to the hip-hop artist that is calling women bitches and hoes. See, a lot of us, we were raised on hip-hop. Hip-hop became our illegitimate father. And all of the toxicity and negativity that was spewed, especially directed towards women, we begin to adopt those things, and then now we tend to defend that mess as if that mess is our father. You see the problem? We see the movies, the boys in the hood. I'm talking about my own personal experience. In the minister society, we begin to adopt certain ideas about what it means to be a quote-unquote African-American man. See, these became our role models, in a sense, in the absence of having an adequate representation and a legitimate representation of a man inside of our life. And that's why it's so very important, last point, that we begin to raise the bar and we make the clear distinction between how a boy functions in society, how a boy functions in a male-female relationship versus how a man functions in society and how a man functions within a male-female relationship. Most importantly, how a boy would function within the context of a family institution, because there are a lot of old boys out there who have children, versus how a man functions as a father within the context of his family institution. When we begin to make these clear distinctions, we can at least begin to have a working construct through which we can gauge our progressions as men. And therefore, women, young girls, older women, what have you, you will have a barometer by which you can look at a male and you can say, I am going to deal with him because he is either a man or a boy. If you want a boy, go for it. But always understand that the boy will cause problems. If you want a man in your life, you better know the difference between a boy and a man. And a man will always solve problems. When a man solves problems, he brings happiness into his home. When he solves problems, he brings joy to his wife. When he solves problems, he keeps his children protected. One of my greatest commitments to my daughters is that they will never be sexually molested. It is not going to happen on my watch. How many of us had that growing up? A father who was there that was willing to say, you women out there, who was willing to say that under no circumstances, there is no possibility that my daughter is ever going to be sexually molested, and I will do whatever I have to do in order to keep her safe and keep her protected to where it is not even a possibility. How many of us have that? This is what I mean. But we have to make this clear distinction between how boys function and how men function. Men, we recognize that we are the front line of defense, and that if that means that we have to put our life on the line, then that is what we do. Very clear distinctions that need to be made.
All right. I'm picking back. I gotta let my women go in because they said they were going to boycott me if I didn't give them a voice.
Now, brother, let me just say one other thing, if you don't mind. Everything that I'm saying here, I'm living this. That's why I can talk about it with the degree of fervor that I have here and the level of masculine energy that, in point of fact, makes a lot of young men who are operating like boys uncomfortable and a lot of women who are not used to that type of energy makes them uncomfortable. I understand.
I experienced that. I know about that firsthand.
As a masculine being, as a young girl, it probably makes you uncomfortable. I understand that, but I want people to understand one thing, most importantly, and that is that as I operate and as I live, because I live this every single day. I know there's a lot of people who like to talk this talk, but they're not living this. They want to talk about positive relationship, but they're not living. They want to talk about we need to respect women, but they got all these, you know, women on the side that they're dealing with. No, I am living this. Never cheated on my wife, never will. Committed. Work hard, do what I got to do to take care of my family. I want people to be very clear about something, that the manner in which I present this information is based upon personal experience and me living this, and that's why I have this level of passion as I speak. And therefore, if you came to my home, everything I'm talking about to you all here, it can be validated. In point of fact, if you spoke with my wife, she will validate it too. So I think that this is another distinction that needs to be made, that there are a lot of people who talk about these issues, but they're talking about it hypothetically. And it sounds great. But I don't care about something sounding great. It has to be practical. It has to be something that's being put into practice. And one thing I most definitely can say is that how I speak and what I speak about is how I live. And even if it makes you a little bit uncomfortable in the manner in which I deliver it as a masculine being with a committed husband for the last 13 years, 5 beautiful children, keep my children safe, keep them fed, make sure that my daughter will never be sexually molested, raising my sons into honorable men so that some of you women out there, your daughters will have at least 3 more to choose from. I live this every single day. Very important point.
That's great. I'm going to put you in the hot seat a little bit after I let Lori and Layla go, but I'm going to dial it up a little bit because that's my nature, and I'm going to get to my chat room, and I'm going to ask you some serious problems that is going on today, and I do believe in restoring and resetting the man. I believe that there is some building and rebuilding that has to take place in that masculine framework. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to talk about some things that are going on today and a little bit more about the rights issue, and I have one more audio clip to play from your mainstream so-called therapists and psychologists and their take on things. But Lori and Layla, if you have anything, come on in.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you, Mr. Honor, for joining our show today. Your words are absolutely beautiful, and they're so spirited filled. You can just hear your truth speaking out, and my wish for this show is that, as it is for any of our shows, is that it impacts, it changes, it provokes thought in people, and which, you know, thought then, you know, goes into action, and it causes you to start making change. And I really hope that people sit down and sit back and really research the interior of themselves and decide where you're at on the whole scheme of things and how life is affecting you or how you're affecting life and those people around you. You know, one thing that was stated earlier, you know, one of my big sayings, is, as everyone in our circle knows, is choices, the magic wand in life, you know. And if you don't use that magic wand in your life, you're left to consequence. And the consequences are, you know, they can be detrimental to all those around you if you don't wield that very powerful thing, as simple as it may be, which is choice. Choice is a very powerful, powerful thing. Something that I've experienced in looking at my children's lives, I've seen where they've been in relationships, whether they have, you know, the more guiding that I have sons, and the more guiding that they have tried to become with their family, sometimes the relationship is stymied in a way because the young girl doesn't want to give all that power to that one, you know, person or whatever. I haven't figured it all out yet, but I do see that a lot of conflict comes up in that, and I think that women, especially in young relationships, I saw it evident all through my sons growing up in high school and in junior high, where as soon as they would get into these girlfriend-boyfriend relationships, all of a sudden it would become this whole ownership type thing or mentality, you know. And, you know, and as we all know, our show deals with real estate, and which is controlled with nets and bounds, which is the perimeter of what your real estate is defined with. And I would say that with these young girls and or young boys that buy into this ownership idea of thinking that you're the one who sets the perimeters of that real estate in your life, maybe you need to slow down and think about that. No one owns anyone. Everyone's on their own journey. And in a true, beautiful relationship that's love-filled and spirit-filled, you lift each other. You guide each other. You know, when we're born and when we die, we're just who we are, you know. We're just that man or just that woman. And any time that you try and change who those people are or influence or, you know, you get mad at them because they're not, you know, they don't want to believe like you believe, or they don't want to do what you want to do, or you think because you like you know, I don't know, whatever, you know, hobby or whatever it is. If you like basketball, then everybody else should like basketball. Everyone needs to just take a back seat on that and allow the individual to bloom and not try to control, be the controlling force. There's no control in a good relationship, or, you know, in a healthy relationship. It just, you know, true love waits. It waits for you to stop. It allows it to find yourself, to find you, you know. When you start doing things that you love, that's when love finds you. Instead of conforming and bending into someone else's beliefs or whatever. I know that sounded kind of convoluted, but hopefully it made a little bit of sense. The only other thing I would say on that whole thing is, as far as the Ray Rice and the really harsh domestic violence, I think the receiver is the first deceiver. I think the whether you're the abuser or you're the abused, you're the receiver of that that whole force, that energy, that belief, that conforming, that mind screw. You know, you're the one who convinces yourself to live that lie. You're the first deceiver. And if I could say one thing to an abuser or an abused person out there today, or if you listen to this show in the future, your spirit is always speaking to you. It's always whispering the truth. Don't delude yourself, and don't believe in the lie. Don't live the lie. Live you. Do you. Do your God. Listen to your spirit. Let it control you. Let it take over your life and, you know, make good use of it. I don't know. It just, the whole Ray Rice thing, it bothers me. I don't know. I'm not down with it. I know I called Sharif whenever he put this announcement out that we were going to tackle this subject, and I called him and I said, you know me. I mean, I've never experienced domestic violence. I've never been, you know, I've known of it, but I've never experienced it in my personal life. But, you know, if it were to ever be done by me, if I told Sharif, I'd go straight to my car, I'd get my gun, and that would be done, because it just wouldn't be allowed in my life.
You ain't playing. She's from Texas.
It just wouldn't be allowed in my life. And after he and I had hung up, I got to thinking about that, and I thought, you know, there'd have to be a progression to have gotten to that point. And I know me, I would have checked out and I'd have used my magic wand of choice before I had got there. There again, you know, not living the lie, not being the receiver of the deceived. So anyway, I don't know. Hopefully some of that made a little bit of sense, but it just, you know, it just bothers me, and it bothers me. It's just so sad when people want to continue to believe that the past defines you, and that even blends back to your opening dialogue whenever you were addressing some of that toxic shit that keeps getting spewed out there for our young, our old, our middle-aged, our, you know, I've people in your lives, even in their 40s and 50s, you know, you see them and they're so infant in their mindset, and they continue to allow the past to be the defining moment in their life, and not realizing the past is something that's supposed to shape and sculpt you and make you wiser, make you more aware, make you more alert, make you rise, you know. And like what Mr. Honor was talking about, you know, being raised, he's a prime example of exactly just that, being raised in a home where he had all these excuses. If you go by the mainstream BS that's perpetuated out there, all the excuses, he had a whole bucket full of them that he could have picked excuse number 105, number 55, no, crackhead, no, this, no, all the excuses he wanted to fail to define him into a continual sewer of lies and deceit and unhappiness, when all the while inside, you know, he would be screaming that he was someone else that could, you know, be better or could be this or could be that. And, you know, and thankfully he didn't fall victim to that. Thankfully he was one of those that were very aware at a young age. And whenever your awareness does come about, you know, own it and embrace it and get out of whatever situation you're in. If it's bringing you down and your spirit's whispering to you, reach out and pull yourself up. That's it.
All right, good point. All right, Layla, before we go to this next video, Layla, and then I'll let Mr. Honor come in, and then we're going to go to the next video, and we're going to turn it up a little bit. You know, I got to roam the jungle and roar a little bit and get on some sensitive topics. But, Layla, go right ahead.
This has been a really excellent conversation, and, you know, Mr. Honor, it's been an honor to hear everything that you had to say. I just want to say something before I go into what I'm going to say. And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit in the past on the prior shows. You know, we as individuals, we form families. And we understand that families form neighborhoods, neighborhoods form communities, communities form cities, cities form states, and states form nations. It's a cycle. And if we as individuals have any faulty tendencies, you know, they get passed along through our communities just like a bad cold passes from one another and ultimately becomes a pandemic. You know, we hear about the swine flu, obviously, and the Ebola. And when that happens in a society with the faulty issues that we may have, this is where we are today with the result, and we see that result in our faces with some of the things that we partake in. So how do we get back to our individual selves? We have to correct those faults that we have, and that goes back to the individual to prevent from this disease, if you will, if you want to call it, from spreading. So I think that, you know, we talked before, I think with Blue Pill, from I Know the Ledge talked about, you know, we're going to go back to the individual. And that's been percolating with me, marinating with me ever since he said it. And as I keep thinking about that, I really firmly see that it will get back to the individual, where we each take a look at our own lives, our own situations, we assess them. If we're looking to progress and move forward, then we take the necessary steps that we need to take to better ourselves, which will then further better our families, our neighborhoods, our communities, and so forth, and will spread out through into the nation, and then that will cause everything to implode upon itself, because we've all taken this positive approach to that started with us, the one, because it only takes that one. You know, when I think about, you know, first of all, I didn't even know anything about this, and I now know who Ray Rice is, as a result of this situation that came out. I didn't realize that this story came out in February or March or whenever it did, and I didn't know anything about Stephen Smith getting suspended or anything like that. I just learned that within these last few days, although we have been moving in our conversation in this area. With regard to that, I will say that, you know, if anyone has a problem, you know, admitting that you have a problem is the first step to a recovery from a problem, and then it can be solved. And in a marital relationship or in any kind of a union, if there's a problem, they both have to agree that there's a problem and be agreeing to figure out how they're going to rectify the problem. If one party of a union is not willing to or not doesn't see that there's a problem, or if there is a problem and they're not willing to cooperate and move forward to see how they can resolve the problem, maybe with some type of counseling, then it causes a further deterioration of that particular union. And I'm speaking from my own behalf, because I have taken the choice in my life after being married at a young age, raising four children, and obviously, you know, in this arena, you know, we've had some debt issues that have come up, but I took a proactive role in my life the last 2 years to separate from my husband. And when I hear we talk about the abuses, some of the abuses that you talk about, I have experienced firsthand. And so some people say, oh, well, you know, and I don't talk about it to everybody. There are only a few people that know of some of the things that I have personally experienced. And we were talking, so I'm talking about the store. I'm talking Brother Sharif, Rory, Rudy, and I. We were on the phone last week, even before we knew we were going to talk about this subject. And we shared some things, and I shared some things. And it's just really releasing when you know you have a situation, you have a family, you can talk about it, and you can release because that's a part of the healing. But when Brother Anna talks about, you know, there are various stages. You've got emotional abuse, you've got verbal abuse, spiritual abuse, at least the physical abuse. Those issues do manifest themselves in stages. And so some people say, well, why would you stay in a situation like that? Because, you know, people are talking about Janae Wright. They say, well, why would she stay in a situation like that? She's talking about her lifestyle. My situation wasn't about lifestyle. In fact, when I got married, we were, you know, we personally didn't have much. In fact, you know, it was a choice, you know, made a full-hearted potential on my part. I can't go back and worry about the past. All we can do is look at the past, review it, but just move forward and aim to not make sure that you don't make those same mistakes again. But, you know, I was reflecting a few days this week and thinking about, what did you do? You know, there are some things that I've just totally, you know, I don't dwell on the negative. I just totally just dismiss them from my mind, if you will. But obviously some things are still there, because then when we talk about some of these things, you know, we talk about the uncomfortableness. I was listening to you, and I'm thinking, oh, that was a little uncomfortable, but it's okay because, you know, I made a choice to accept the decisions that I've made and to move forward. But back to what I was saying, you know, when you're in a loving relationship, and I can say my relationship was loving, but there was something that twisted, and the pivotal point on where it twisted, I think had to do with potentially some outside influences that perpetuate itself into the relationship, and that bond was not totally sealed. And so I would just say over time, we just grew a little bit further apart, kept growing further apart, never came back to center. Yes, and we had children, we raised children, and you know, my husband at the time used to travel all the time. He would be home on the weekends. I mean, I still had the children to deal with Monday through Friday, and their activities. I had activities on the weekends. So I look back on them and thinking that, yeah, you know, I probably kept myself really, really, really busy so that I wouldn't have to deal with stuff that potentially could come up. I wanted to make sure I didn't make him angry in any way. Wanted to make sure that I did things right. I wanted to make sure the clothes were washed and the shirts were starched and all those types of things, just to make sure that everything would be smooth and easy when we had to reengage. You know, but then there was a time when traveling away from home 5 days a week was going to end, and then he was going to be there every night. And that was when there was a really big shift. He still had to travel, but come home at night, and then he's there in all of our faces, and I'm realizing, I don't know, you're not the person that I thought that I should have been with. So, yes, I did leave. I did leave at one time, and I left because things got really ugly, and I didn't want there to be an issue because I understand what happens when we involve the police and so forth and so on, so I just left, and I actually took myself and my children into a shelter. This is probably over 20 years ago. And I learned through those experiences that one should never go back. I learned that. But I'm thinking, no, my situation is different because when we were in there, I'm thinking, there's no way. There's no way I belong in here. I don't relate to any of these women that are in here. Some of the stories and some of the situations that they were involved in did not cut anywhere near what I thought my situation was. So I said, okay, fine. You know, we made arrangements that we were going to reengage, and that there were certain parameters that we were going to reengage upon. But there was a contract that we actually decided that we agreed verbally to. Unfortunately, that part of the contract was not honored on, from my perspective, and always there's always two sides to the story, so I should have put that disclosure out, but our perception, I just want to say on the sidebar that our own perception is our own reality. Okay, so from my perception is my reality, and that's the perception from which I'm speaking. So from my perspective, you know, that part of the main thing and what I wanted at the time was counseling. I felt that we needed, in order to have a very aim to have a healthy relationship that was going to be healthy for the children as well, was to go into counseling, which he agreed upon, and he did not enter into. So I found myself back in a situation. It died down, and it was fine for a while until there were incidences that rose itself. So, you know, emotional, verbal, those were the things that really, I think, have more far-reaching damages than anything else. So,
all right. I gotcha. All right. Let's get in. Let's change gears a little bit, Mr. Honor. I'm going to let you respond. We're going to dial it up a little bit. We're going to dial it up a lot, let me just be honest with you. We did the Oprah Winfrey side of it. Now we're going to do a little Maury Povich and, you know, talk about some issues today that are relevant. Get back on Rice. And we're going to step it up a little bit, if you don't mind. I'm sure you can handle it. I've listened to you before. So, you know, I'm going to be right back. We're going to play this video. And then we're going to rumble a little bit.
Let's get ready to rumble!
The other side of the Ray Rice story, his wife and the millions of victims of domestic violence. Many people are asking how she could stay with him. Now a woman who knows all too well is answering that question. Beverly Gooden's powerful response using the hashtag #WhyIStayed is creating a viral movement. We're going to talk to her and Dr. Phil in a minute. They're both here, but first here's ABC's Ryan Smith.
The haunting images, a national wake-up call. Janae Rice knocked out cold by then-fiancé Ray Rice. The tape costing Rice his livelihood. But sticking by his side, the victim, Janae, now his wife, posting on Instagram Tuesday, "This is our life. Just know we will continue to grow and show the world what real love is." In May, Janae even shouldering some of the blame.
"I do deeply regret the role that I played in the incident that night."
And while some ask how she could defend the football star, others like Beverly Gooden, a former victim of domestic violence, fired off tweets listing the many reasons it took her a year to leave her own abuser, all ending with the hashtag #WhyIStayed. "He said he would change. I believed him. He lied." Gooden's posts sparking an avalanche of comments, because every time was the last time. Hashtag #WhyIStayed. And because I was pregnant and wanted my daughter to have a dad. Hashtag #WhyIStayed. The viral hashtag, and now the infamous tape, igniting a coast-to-coast conversation on the topic.
"I would never stay with a man that did that to me."
"She could be a positive role model for women going through similar situations."
"Abused women often stay in the relationship and blame themselves."
But it's far from a new issue. It's estimated that 25% of American women experience domestic violence. Statistics also show that it takes an average of 7 attempts for a victim to leave the abuser.
"It's a horrible decision to make. In 75% of cases of domestic violence, the most traumatic and the most dangerous time in the relationship is not when she stays, it's when she leaves."
For Good Morning America, Ryan Smith, ABC News, New York.
Joining us now is the creator of that hashtag, #WhyIStayed, Beverly Gooden, and Dr. Phil McGraw, the host of the Dr. Phil Show, who has testified on Capitol Hill on the issue of domestic violence. We have very much been looking forward to having this important discussion, and thank you both.
Thank you.
You know,
for sharing
it is
some
an
time.
Important discussion, and people are starting to understand what Beverly's talking about here, because the truth is, separation assault is a phenomenon. that occurs when you attempt to leave the abuser and even the 2 or 3 weeks after, and there are more fatal injuries and serious injuries during that time than any other. And I would hate to see this debate spark people into saying, okay, I need to get up and leave, because there's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
And we're going
to
talk about that, and I'm glad that you're bringing that up, Dr. Phil. Beverly, there are a lot of women that are watching this morning that are in an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
And it took you many times to be able to leave your ex-husband, so you
yes.
understand.
Yes, I do understand,
and,
yeah.
And just talk about how many times it took you and why.
Well, the first time I tried to leave him, he laid down in front of the door to our apartment, and slept there the whole night, so I couldn't get out. So I didn't leave. I think the main reason why I didn't leave, and I think this is underestimated a lot, is that I loved him. You know, I loved him. I believed in him. I believed what he said when he said he wouldn't do it again. I trusted him. I was afraid of him. All of these reasons are invalidated a lot in the public eye as bad reasons why you stay. Fear is real. You know, I was afraid of him because of the abuse. I was afraid if he would hurt me after I left. And all of those things are valid. And staying, although it may seem like a bad decision, sometimes it's the only decision a woman can make.
We've been asking people to write in, and they've said something similar to what you said. They think when you see this, that the word that a lot of people say, oh, that woman is stupid. That's the word
mm-hmm.
that the people are using online. And they said fear, as you talked about. You've talked about this. You've counseled people. So what do you say?
Well, we have a huge commitment to this, the Dr. Phil Show, and my wife's foundation, When Georgia Smiled, is devoted 100% to domestic violence. And the things that she said, that her husband said, these are the top 10 reasons that abusers, they're not novel. They come up with them every mm-hmm. time to keep them there. And the number one tool of the abuser is isolation. They cut you off from family, friends, church, others that can give you support and help you, and so you're left alone, and they take away the phone, they take away money. And abuse is not just physical, it's all of the erosion of self-worth and self-esteem.
So what do they do? Because as you said, and there are startling statistics about it is sometimes more dangerous to leave than to stay.
Because the abuser panics. It's like I'm losing control, so they ratchet it up even more and more and more. And the number one rule needs to be safety. I would hate for this debate to spur women to just precipitously jump up and either confront their abuser or leave without a plan. Number one rule is safety for you and your children. Have a plan and go about that plan. And we developed something called the Aspire Initiative, which we'll give you all a link to,
okay.
which talks about the steps you need safety-wise, the planning to get out and get out safely. It's not just get out, it's get out safely for you and your children,
and
right?
And how did you do that?
That's what you...
And how did you do that, Seth?
So I started to go secretly onto domestic violence.
All right. We're back. Welcome to Thor Radio. We are airing our part four of the series, Violence in America. We have very esteemed guest, Mr. Lennon Honor here, and we've been talking about the issue of domestic violence. We've been talking somewhat, and I want to get back on the topic of Ray Rice and the perceived violence that many of us have. And I heard a lot about it. Mr. Honor was definitely very eloquent on the subject matter of men restructuring themselves and respecting the woman and all of those things, which are right on and exact, all right? And I agree with that 100%. I cannot disagree with him enough, and definitely men need to take heed. We also heard from the panel and the mothers, and those things are important. And whenever women hear men, be men. I said that last week. A lot of our men don't sound like men anymore. They don't act like men. You challenge them a little bit, they start crying. I see that being a dominant male, alpha male. I mean, I'm told I'm intimidating to men. Okay, so imagine that. I don't understand that. But let's be a little bit fair, because I have several emails of people that weren't able to make it. I also have some friends that wanted to chime in, but they are at work, one of which has been texting me the whole time listening to the show. And we need to address the issue of women, all right? And that is, you know, I listened to the clip that we just played with Dr. Phil, and, you know, I heard the woman say she didn't leave, and I'm very sensitive and compassionate to any type of abuse that anyone has gone through, and I try to be straight down the middle with it because I believe abuse occurs on both sides. I see men getting abused. I see women getting abused. There are shows that are entire series on women who kill men, okay, for many different reasons. And I see women who are abusing men either, it can be financially. We need to address that issue. And one of the issues someone spoke about was the Tiger Woods, okay? And, you know, we get all of these media outlets talk about, you know, I think Tiger at some point, they got into a disagreement, which is human, okay? And I know Mr. Honor has been, you know, married for 13 years, so, you know, those experiences are probably not common or probably not at all. Let's talk about how things are today, how women are today, how women treat men today, how men treat women today. We talked about the music issue. We talk about the degrading of women in the music issue, but we didn't talk about the side where the women are willing participants in these videos, the Beyonce syndrome, the sexuality issue, the gold digging issue, the divorce rate, which is 76% of that, which is filed by women because they have the upper hand in those events. Let's talk about Tiger Woods, you know, how they try to perceive him to be violent because he took a golf club to his Cadillac Escalade. Is that being abusive? I don't know. Are you not allowed to get angry anymore and take a golf club to your truck? Are men not getting angry, and are men not expressing themselves through music? One, because we address the fact that they're growing up without fathers. Okay, so there's a deep-seated anger there. Okay, there's a perceived anger because of that. Okay? Let me draw from my personal experiences. I had a great mother, but I also had a mother who manipulated circumstances in retaliatory fashion. Okay, there were times my father was supposed to come get us, and mom wanted to, you know, flex her muscles and said, "Look, if you're not here at 6 o'clock, just don't come." Okay, and we would be sitting on the couch with snorkels on and boots, sweating, sitting on those old couches with the thick plastic on it. I mean, you lay on there, you would absolutely lose 5 pounds. But I watched my mother, you know, kind of talk to my father as if he was a chump. Like, "You're not here at 6 o'clock, just don't come." An argument would ensue, and my father would go, "You don't run me, I'm not coming." Let's also talk about, like I said, the women and how they carry themselves. We have the Latin Basketball Wives. We have the other reality shows where ignorance and bad behavior is just on blast, and we have to contribute those things as well to the woman's image. Let's also talk about, when I say divorce, 76% filed by women, okay? Let's talk about pregnancy. Let's talk about the fact that we have abortions, we have birth control, we have welfare, we have all these things, and we have women that are having children. Yes, the man has a contribution to that, but men don't have babies, okay? So until the discipline is put back in the woman to either close your legs or, you know, maintain your birth control protection, you know, all the time, again, I'm sympathetic and I'm sensitive to these issues, but also I know that men don't have babies. And we're dealing with the welfare system when we see we have women who have 4 or 5 kids, some by different baby daddies, okay? All right, where's the discipline there? Is it too comfortable for women to be promiscuous these days? Then let's look at the Ray Rice issue. I listen to the wives, you know, talk about things, and they talk about it, and it seems like to me, she's like, "You're messing with my money. I'm with him because of the money. I'll endure abuse because of the money." And I hear a lot of women talk about, you know, I was in relationships, and I understand that. And my mother, I've seen family members stay because of financial reasons. But let's look at the point that how many kids do we have by a man until we later come out and be like, "Oh, that just wasn't good." 4 kids, 3 kids, 5 kids? You know, when does the woman have a responsibility to make good decisions and not just blame the men for every decision that they made in a pregnancy? Or men don't control, you know, when a woman has a baby. She get pregnant and she should be like, I'll let you know what I'm going to do. You know, there's no input from the man. Maybe he might be like, I'm not in a position to take care of a child right now. Well, you shouldn't have slept with me and made it. Well, what happened to your part? All right. Let's talk about those factors. Let's talk about the domestic violence that occurs against men. Because I'm just telling you right now, I see it all the time. I have friends that's gone through it. I have women are a lot more aggressive these days. They're a lot more vocal. Okay. They're a lot more so-called independent. And they're a lot more, as you can see depicted in videos and in real life, or Atlanta Housewives or whatever those other reality shows are, they're about the money. They're about the money. So does a man get angry when he knows a woman can just file a divorce and more than likely she's going to have the upper hand? Or if she goes down to the government and get welfare, they're going to give it to her? They're not going to tell her don't have any more kids. They're just going to give her the welfare, give her a cell phone, give her some gas, give her some food, give her some WIC, some milk, and other little things, and not tell her to maintain her stability in terms of don't be going out there having 2 or 3 more kids. Let's talk about some of those real issues that goes along with, yes, building a family structure, but let's talk about the women's contribution to these things, and then they come out, and I think some of them, not all of them, play victim. Oh, I was in a bad relationship, and yeah, I should have left a long time ago, and I'm leaving with 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 kids, and it wasn't right from the beginning. Come on, let's take equal responsibility, because what I see in society now is that women want to, you know, have equal rights but not equal responsibility. I'm just going to be honest with you. You want to make the same amount of money, but if you go to divorce court, you want him to pay you, okay? Or if you go to child support, you want him to pay you, you know, or anywhere else, you want him to hold the door. I mean, we got to balance out, Mr. Lennon. We have to balance this out, because for the most part, it's leaning so far that the men, and I believe you have to put that strength back in the men, but I believe the woman, honestly, has a lot more control over a man when she's conducting herself properly. And that is a side that we have to talk about. So if you would, Mr. Honor.
Yeah, let me say this, because, again, we're dealing with symptoms. All this is symptomatic. When you're in a positive relationship, healthy family institution, all of what you described here, on both sides too, men and women, are really boys and girls, because everything that we're talking about in terms of domestic abuse and the trifling ways, that's not the behavior of a good woman, and it's not the behavior of a good man. Again, the distinction has to be made. But understand that when we establish healthy family institutions through positive relationships, these life experiences become obsolete, and it's important that we're clear about that. However, yes, you are right. We must look at women's role in a lot of what we've spoken about here. But let me also put it this way, though, too, because, again, it's not about blaming someone. Again, the blame game is reflective of the division that we tend to create amongst men and women. One of the reasons why I tend to speak about what men need to do is because I am a man. One of the reasons why I talk about raising boys into men is because that is what I'm doing. And by raising my boys into men, there will be 3 honorable men being raised up where 3 women who are prepared for them will be able to experience a positive relationship in a healthy family institution. That's the solution. The symptoms, therefore, of the dysfunctionality that you are describing, whether it's from the vantage point of looking at what males are doing or what females are doing, those symptoms dissipate. They're not even part of my own personal reality as a man. Now, they were as a child, but you see the difference here. Let me say this. We can look at women's role or females' role in all of this, too. But you know what? And this is just being honest. All that we can identify within females in terms of their behaviors maybe, or maybe even their participation to certain degrees in these levels of dysfunctionality, my daughters won't be dealing with any of that. See, I want us to be very clear about this before we proceed. My daughters will not experience abusive relationships. My daughters will not be on welfare. My daughters will not be manipulative of males. My daughters will not be gold diggers. My daughters will not be any of the projections that we see, the hoochified projections that we see in the music videos that have become standardized that men tend to focus or males tend to focus on so as to degrade the value of women, and vice versa. The my son, see, now I want people to be clear about this, because I'm providing a solution here. I'm not trying to place blame, because in my household, by being a man, by virtue of me being a man and my wife being a woman and being committed to our family, committed to our relationship, we are assuring that our children do not become these stereotypes, the same stereotypes that many women say that all men are dogs. That's not true. My three boys will not be quote-unquote dogs. They are being raised into honorable men. I am not here to try to place blame. And the people who tend to try, if you're talking about men, what men should do or how we need to raise our boys, we're so quick to say, well, what about women? And then when we talk about, you know, what women need to do in order to raise our daughters, to prepare them for positive relationships, then we say, well, what about what men should be doing? That's not the point. The point is that what we need to be doing is looking for viable solutions, and the solution is positive male-female relationships and healthy family institutions. I have to say that before I get started, because we often tend to we tend to set up this dynamic where it's about conflict, and we tend to do that because we're not prepared for positive relationship. In point of fact, we tend to do that because on some level we know that we're not prepared for positive relationships. You'll find that most of the people who tend to look at the females who are in the most dire situations, and the women who tend to look at the males who are in the most dire negative representations of males, these are people who are not in positive male female relationships, and they're not prepared for them. So instead of looking at what they need to do as a man or as a woman to improve upon their condition so they can create a greater reality for themselves, manifest a positive relationship and a healthy family institution, what they tend to do is look at the worst example of their complementary hand and focus on that. I'm not about that, ladies and gentlemen.
That's true.
That's not a solution.
That's true.
And for men to do that, let me just say it, because I like to speak about men because that is what I am. For men to do that is cowardice. You can talk about, and you can call them ratchet if you want to. You can call them hoochies if you want to. You can even call them bitches and hoes if you want to. But that won't make you a man. So let's deal with the solutions. Now, this being said, yes, we do need to take a look at females' role in all this. And if you want to address the issue of abuse, in particular domestic violence, let me just say this. I love my mother dearly. I hold her in very high esteem. And when I say that, what I mean by that is even at an early age, I recognized that what my mother was going through when I was coming up, that I was going to do my best so that when I had a wife, my wife would not experience what my mother had. And the fact that my mother endured what she went through, remarkable, speaks to the power that
right.
my mother possessed. It also speaks to the power of women. But let me say this, that throughout
one all second, Brother Honor, let me interpret. 1 second. We have 2 minutes left in the live stream, 657-383-0332. Those of you in the chat want to continue on for another hour, you need to call in for the live stream is closed, 657-383-0332. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. I want to speak about a particular childhood experience here. And this is that for the first 13 years of my life, I was in a situation growing up where my father was extremely abusive. In my book, I also talk about how, in retrospect, I recognize that my mother did not make the best choice, not just in terms of choosing my father as a mate. Okay, and I'm talking about my mama here now, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, again, it's not about placing blame. But my mother did not make the right choice in a mate. She also did not make the best choices in terms of keeping him there. This is my mom I'm talking about here, ladies and gentlemen. Do you know that for the 13 years of my life and all the different levels of abuse that I experienced, my brother experienced, my four sisters experienced, and my mother experienced, it was not my mother's decision to separate from my father and all the abuse that he put us through. Do you all know that it was my decision at the age of 13? See, and I'm talking about my mother here. So, I want people to be clear about this. You men, you can complain all day. Well, you're just talking about what men – I don't want to hear that because it's not a solution, and it's not about placing blame. And here I am giving you an example of my own mother's – in my own childhood experience. Do you all know that there was a day where I approached my mother and I told her – we had a candid conversation at the age of 13, and I told her that – what my father had been doing and what he was continuing to do was damaging to, and I'm 13, it's damaging to all of us. It's hurting the family. That's the term that I use. And we have to do something. There's something that needs to be done. And I had this conversation with my mother, and she said, okay, I'll talk with your father about it. By this time, my father was on crack. Very abusive, very volatile, very emotional, into rage. That's another thing when you talk about, is it okay to get angry? Boys get angry. Men do not. You see, people need to understand this. Let's stop accepting these childish behaviors. And then we say, okay, yeah, we should get angry about things. I don't get angry about anything. I may talk passionately like I'm talking here, but I'm not angry. When there's a problem, I don't get angry. When someone does something that is offensive to me, or I won't get angry. That's not what men do. Men remain calm, and we solve problems. Boys get angry and cause problems. You will never solve problems by being angry. The point being is that after having this discussion with my mother for whatever reason, and I do not know why, when she spoke to my father that evening, she didn't talk to him as if she had concerns. She spoke to him as if I had concerns. And so, therefore, it wasn't about her saying, look, we need to make some changes in this household. It was about me saying that there is a problem with my father's behavior. My father called me downstairs, and he looked me in the eyes, and I stood before him shivering, and he said, your mother told me that you have been talking about what I've been doing. Is this true? I nodded my head. Well, son, I want you to understand something. If you ever tell anybody about what I do, then you're going to find yourself picking your ass up off the ground. I'm 13 years old. Do you understand, son? I nod my head. Now take your ass upstairs. I turn, walk upstairs, and go into my room. It was on that night that I decided that I was going to have to do something different because my mother was not. We have 13 years of abuse. For my older sister, by that time, she had had 18 years of abuse. 6 children being raised in an extremely abusive household. I'm writing about all this inside the book. So, again, I want people to understand, I'm talking about my own mama here. And don't let nobody else say anything about my mama, but I will say it here just to prove a point. It wasn't my mother's decision. It was ultimately my decision. How so? Because that night I made a decision that I was going to do something. And the other thing, too, I want people to understand something that where I come from, when someone says you're going to find yourself picking your ass up off the ground, that's not an idle threat. That translates to where I come from, that you will end up dead. In other words, I will kill you. That's what that translates to. So I want people to understand the severity of the words and what my father was really saying to me. If you tell anyone about what I am doing, then I am going to kill you. And I believed him. Because he had been so abusive for so many years, 13 years of my life, I did not doubt for a moment that he would kill me. In point of fact, I had lived in such a degree of fear of him, like my mother, like my siblings, for 13 years. And there were times, many times, where I thought he would come home and he goes into a rampage because he's high and he's going to kill me, kill my sisters, kill my brother, kill my mother. Many times, I used to sleep with weapons in my bed, knives under my pillow. Don't tell me, ladies and gentlemen, that somehow we need to be placed in blame. That's not the issue. So what do I do? Well, ladies and gentlemen, over the years, my father had developed a drug schedule. And for those of y'all who have ever dealt with drug addicts in your household or you dealt with crackheads in particular, they have a particular schedule. Usually about 9 p.m. they would leave, 9, 10, sometimes a little bit later than that they would leave the home, and they would not come back until the following day. I knew my father's pattern, and so therefore when he would leave the house, I would usually get up out of my bed and I would go downstairs and I would lay down on the couch and I would check and make sure all the windows and doors were locked. I would lay on the couch. I would try to go to sleep, but the whole time I'm fearful. I'm fearful that my father's going to come home and kill me. I'm fearful that someone's going to break into the house. Again, living in fear. Then I would get up and I would check all the windows and doors all over again. And then I would lay back down, run the same routine. Then I would get back up and check all the windows. You see what's going on here. So I've lived in fear, a fear that could have been alleviated if my mother had made a different choice. 13 years of this, fascinating dynamic, psychologically speaking, I was still running that program up until the age of 35. I'm 38 years old now. Up until the age of 35, I would get up and look around and look into the closet, make sure no one's in there. I would go to the door, check, make sure it's locked, check all the windows, lay down, get back up, do it again. I've been through the shit, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not here to place blame. I'm talking about my mama here. So what I'm getting at is understanding my father's pattern, understanding when he would leave, I would also look into his – he had a bathroom downstairs. He dominated the whole downstairs space. He also had a closet downstairs where he would keep drug paraphernalia and also inside the bathroom. In particular, inside the bathroom – and it just had a toilet in there and a sink. You can open up that shelf under the sink. You can open it up, and towards the back, he would keep his drug stash. So what do I decide to do? Because I knew that something had to change because I recognized it. My father's threat meant that he was going to kill me if I ever said anything, and I couldn't live like that anymore. And I couldn't allow my mother to continue to accept him as being someone inside of the home. Ladies and gentlemen, what I decided to do, I remember this to this day. I write about it inside my book. I went downstairs. After my father left, I went downstairs, and I went through his drug stash. I opened up that black case, and when I opened it up, there were crack pipes inside of the case, and there were rusted razor blades, and there were snorting straws in there, too. Some of y'all don't know what I'm talking about. Some of y'all do know what I'm talking about. There was also this little package of heroin in there, too. Some other things in there, too. And what I did was I went into the kitchen, and I grabbed some plastic baggies, and I brought that into the bathroom. And then I also got a small piece of paper, and I got a pencil. And what I did was I took the drug paraphernalia and put each one inside of a bag and marked each one as evidence A, evidence B, evidence C, evidence D, and evidence E at the age of 13. And then I put everything back that was left, put it back, and I made sure that everything looked like nothing had been touched. And then I took what I had collected, and I went upstairs, put it in my backpack. And my plan was, ladies and gentlemen, was to go to school the next day, walk into the office, and show somebody. It was not my mother's decision to let this abusive man go. It was my decision to do what I had to do at the age of 13 so that my family would not continue to live in this deplorable condition which I had experienced for the last 13 years. Do you all know that that night I did not sleep? Because I thought that my father was going to come home and find that his drugs was missing, or his drug paraphernalia was missing. He was going to come into a rampage, come up and kill everybody. I stayed up the whole night. That morning, my sister, I said, come here, please, let me show you. She comes into the room, and I open up my backpack, and she says, what are you doing? I said, I'm taking this to school, and I'm telling on Daddy. You can't do that. Why not? Because he's our dad. That's no different than when women say, I can't leave him because he's my husband, or because he makes a certain amount of money, or because he's the father of my children. Understand that this mentality is passed down from one generation to the next, and in many cases passed down from the abused women, passes it down to the next generation. But it's not about placing blame. It's about taking action, which I did on that day. That morning, we leave for school. And when I'm walking, and my father hasn't come home yet because he usually will come home in the afternoon. Again, they have this drug addict have a schedule. Again, I'm 13 years old going through this shit. I leave the home with my backpack. I don't have books in there. I have drug paraphernalia inside my backpack, crack pipes, rusted razor blades, heroin. This is what I have to go to school. And while I'm walking to the bus stop, I'm fearful that my father just came home, that he's going to be coming around the corner to kill me. And while I'm waiting on the bus for the bus to come, I'm thinking that my father just got home. He found out he's going to come around the corner and kill me. But luckily, the bus came. I get on the bus. And I'm sitting on the bus, and one of my friends, close friends at the time, Odia, she keeps asking me, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I don't say anything. I get to school, I get off of the bus, and I walk directly into the bathroom. And I look into the mirror, and tears are streaming from my eyes. I'm looking into the mirror. Am I going to do this? This is my father. But again, 13 years of abuse, nothing has changed. It's only gotten worse. My mother is unwilling to do anything. In point of fact, I don't even understand why she told my father without presenting it as if she really wanted this change to take place. She made it seem as if it was all me. Okay, again, I love my mama, but I want y'all to understand it's not about placing blame, and women do play a role in this, but that's not the point. The point is the solution that we enact as men at the age of 13, just a boy. What are the choices? What are we going to do differently? And this was what I was going to do, and as I looked into the mirror, I asked myself, am I going to do this? Had a friend walk in named Jason. He walks in. He says, what's wrong with you? I opened up my backpack and showed him what I had in my backpack. His face, his jaw dropped. What the fuck are you doing? Is that yours? No, that's my dad's. He said, well, what are you doing with that shit? I'm going to take this to the office. Nah, dude, you ain't going to do that, homie. You ain't going to do that. I got to. Oh, man. You see, we make all types of excuses, and we may even try to stop people from doing what needs to be done. It's not about placing blame. It's about a solution. I'm looking at myself, and he leaves, and I continue to look at myself in the mirror, tears streaming from my eyes, and I say, I have to do this. I leave the bathroom. I walk directly to the office. When I walk into the office, the person at the front desk, she looks at me, and she says, what do you need? I need to talk with somebody. Well, what's the problem? I need to talk with a counselor. Well, what is the issue? I need to talk with a counselor. Mr. Libby, they call one of the counselors out of name. It's Mr. Libby. He comes up to the front. He says, Lennon, because he knew me. Lennon, what are you doing in here? Oh, I have to show you something. Well, what is it? I have to show it to you in private. He looks at me. okay. And he motions for me to come to the back of the office. We go to the back of the office, make a left, and we go into his office space, a very small office. He sits down. He says, take a seat. I sit down. He says, now, what's the problem? I have to show you something. Well, what is it? I proceed to open up my backpack, and I dump all of the drug paraphernalia that I collected the night before, and I dump it right there on his desk. His mouth drops. What is this? What are you doing? What is this? Is this yours? No, this is my dad's. What's been going on? My dad, he's a crackhead. He's abusive. He's been beating on my mama for years. He's been beating on us for years. You see, he could not believe what was unfolding, and he had no idea. He knew my family. He had no idea that this was taking place inside the home. He was stressed out, ladies and gentlemen. And what does he do? Hold on just a second. Is this why your brother's been acting out in school? Yes. Is this why you've been sleeping in class so much? Yes. Is this why this? Is this why this? Yes. Hold on. He gets up. He goes and gets another counselor who has known my family for decades. She comes into the room. We talk for a little while, and she says, Lennon, go on back to class. I go back to class. A couple of periods later, I get a note to come to the office. I go to the office, and I walk. They take me to this back room, conference room. I walk into the room, and there's my mother and my siblings, too, by the way. All of them collected inside of this conference room, and we start to talk. We talk about me bringing the stuff to school, talk about the types of things that were taking place inside the home. All of this was not initialized by my mother. All of this, I initialized this. I'm talking about my own mama here, ladies and gentlemen. It's not about placing blame, though, ladies and gentlemen. So what we going to do that's going to be different to change the life experience of our own children? And I had to change it myself, the life experience of my siblings. And then also I had to change this so that my mother could experience something different and so that I can begin to prepare myself for the man that I am here today. And, you know, the last question that they asked us, They were talking to my mother, and they said, well, what do you want to do? And she replies, well, the only reason why I kept them inside the home, meaning my father, was because I wanted them to have a father. 13 years of abuse, and that's the justification? And he never functioned as an honorable man, never functioned as a committed father to his children. He was abusive to us. Do I blame my mother? Is it necessary for me to even blame my father for that matter? See, that's not the point. The point is, what is the solution, ladies and gentlemen? We can get all caught up in trying to blame people, but that's what people do who ain't willing to do shit, who ain't willing to do the work, who aren't willing to change things. I'm about changing things, ladies and gentlemen. And so when my mother says the only reason why I kept him in the home was because I wanted my children to have a father, the principal, she says, well, let's ask each one of your children. And one by one, she asks us, well, do you want your father in the home? First child says no. Second child says no. Third child says no. Fourth child says no. And five of us there. The youngest one wasn't there. And then when they get to me, I'm the last one, and I say no. And I probably want to say hell no. I say no. A couple of days later, Popo or the marshal comes with my father. He collects all of his things. My mother gets a restraining order from him. And that was the last time, at the age of 13, that was the last time that I had my father inside the home. Now, could my mother have made a different decision 13 years prior? Because he was abusive to my mother. My older sister told me he was abusive to my mother, and she remembers him being abusive when she was 2 years old. Could my mother have done something different so that her children didn't experience that, or so that perhaps her own daughters didn't get into their mind this program that somehow abuse is okay, or that somehow maybe my brother and I received this programming that somehow it's okay to abuse women or to be a womanizer like my father is, this quote-unquote pimp archetype. Yes, she could have done something different. But she had her own life experiences. She had her own degrees of traumatization. She had her own challenges in life, her trials and tribulations, if you will. And we have to be sensitive to that, because when we try to continue to try to look for place and blame, blame doesn't change shit, ladies and gentlemen. And you dudes need to cut that shit out too, by the way. And I'm just going to say it because I'm a man. Because I see these people on YouTube talking all this shit about black women. And they always look for the most degraded situations, the woman who got five babies. What about the women who are out here trying to handle things and trying to make sure that their children got food on the table and in the absence of the children's father? And these women are working hard, not on welfare, working hard, busting their ass every single day so their children have clothes on their back. What about that? See, we tend to focus on the worst examples, these weak-ass dudes. I'm just saying it like it needs to be said, because it makes us feel better about our own weaknesses. That's not a solution. The solution is not placing blame, ladies and gentlemen, to make a short story longer. The solution is taking action.
So tell me, Mr. Honor, tell me this. Mr. Rice has a daughter, okay?
Yes.
And let's get back on the topic of
the perceived abuse, and we have to be balanced in our approach, and we have to, everybody is going to have a side. And I know that, you know, and I'm speaking from other people, I know that we're taught growing up, both men and women, to make sacrifices for a relationship. And sometimes those sacrifices are our happiness. That's not something I ever agreed with. Do you believe that one in a relationship sacrifice their happiness to have a relationship?
No. No, that's
can take a minute to answer that, and then I want to bring in, you know, another voice to discuss the topic.
Yes, let me say that that is the ultimate form of paradox. One of the problems is that we tend to not know what love is in the first place. So when an abused woman says that I love him, like in the clip that you played, how can you love someone that abuses you? It's a paradox. See, you really don't know what love is until you've experienced love, and the people who are supposed to give you the most love so you can have an idea about what love is should be your parents in the first place. See, my children, they know what love is. So when they get into the relationship later on in life, that they will know what they're getting into. So in the case of Ray Rice in particular, you know, that's not love. Punching your wife is not love. Her arguing with your mate, that's not love either. It's a destructive act. It's a form of psychological warfare that is enacted through the use of words or verbiage, if you will. So I want people to understand, we tend to misconstrue positive relationships with levels of abuse. In other words, we say we have to sacrifice our own happiness so that we can be in a relationship. That's a paradox. In point of fact, that is a juvenile way of looking at male-female relationships, that many of us, we got that program when we was in high school. We got to suffer through relationships. No. And on some level, that's what my mother had adopted. Again, I'm talking about my own mother, that it's okay to suffer through all of this for the sake of quote-unquote love or for the sake of my own children. No. Relationships, positive relationships, which is the real issue here. If my father functioned as a man, if my mother functioned as a woman, and I'm talking about understanding, they understood the notion of a positive male-female relationship, all the degrees of traumatization that I experienced up to the age of 13 and beyond, I would not have experienced. It's really that simple. So when we say that somehow we have to sacrifice happiness in order to experience love, that's a paradox. Because on some level, my mother was sacrificing happiness, and on some level, my father was sacrificing happiness, and not just their own, but their own children. So I think we need to be very clear about that. And also within the case of Ray Rice, if he has a daughter, first of all, Ray Rice should be in jail. We tend to also make excuses as males because, again, I mean, in many cases, we tend to identify with these abusive males because we didn't have examples of what an honorable man is. We identify with these abusive males, and we want them to be okay. We want everything to work out just for them. And then we want to place blame on women. Look, it's not about placing blame, but there is some significance to the fact that if a man puts his hand on a woman, or even if a woman puts her hand on a man, somebody should go to jail. And yet, is that the case? Is that what has happened with Ray Rice? And he has a daughter, too. What kind of example is he setting for his daughter? And to a deeper degree, if you want to go here, what type of an example is Ray Rice's wife setting for her daughter? So we can place blame all the way across the board, but the solution is positive male-female relationships and out of that growing healthy family institutions. That's what I'm about.
All right. Before I open up the call for Unique, I'm going to say this as to piggyback on what you said. Okay, he did definitely demonstrate a bad example for both himself, his wife, for family, and everything else. I don't believe in excuses. I don't believe in victims. Okay, so let me ask you this question. What was her example when you talk about she didn't do herself any justice? She's in it for the money.
Well, she may be in it for it.
And
no,
okay, right. So she's willing. You know, I guess when we could take your story and we could take Layla's story and we can take Lori's story and maybe some of my story. And everybody know that back in the days, parents made sacrifices either for the kids. They made it for economic purposes. They made it, some of them, because they didn't want to be lonely. But understand that now I think the women have a mindset based on what they say is a depletion of good men, that they're willing to endure maybe what their parents did, but for money. If it makes money, it makes sense.
So talk a little bit for that, and then I'm going to bring Unique in to give her perspective on things. But just take a minute to expound on that element of it.
Yes, and this may be a harsh thing to say, but when we approach relationships and we hold on to relationships, or even when we get into relationships, and there are some women who do that, right? They'll get in a relationship for money or for economics, right? And some people call them gold diggers. Understand that when this is done, this is no different than it's a lesser form of prostitution in essence. I know that's harsh, and some people may even say that that's sexist, but this is the truth. It is a lesser form of prostitution wherein a woman will deal with a male, even if he's abusive, for the money. And then everything all else that goes into the relationship, sexual activity, so forth and so on, for the money. Yes, there are women who look at things that way. With my mother, that wasn't the case because my father stole from the home and he wasn't working for most of my young life, so it wasn't like he was really bringing in income. He was actually stealing stuff from the home to fulfill his crack addiction, his drug addiction. But what I'm saying is that there are women who do that, but we should also be very clear that simply because there are women who are doing that, that it doesn't mean that somehow there aren't good women out there that as men we can focus in on. Here's one other point I wanted to make too here. And that is that one of the things that tends to happen is that when we are not prepared for a positive relationship, we tend to look for individuals that will manifest in our lives negative relationships, or those who are in negative relationships, we tend to focus in on them. And one of the reasons why this is done, psychologically speaking, is so long as you focus in on someone else's dysfunctionality, you don't necessarily have to be accountable and held accountable for your own dysfunctionality. I can say this, too, as a last point. People, we can talk all day about dysfunctional male-female relationships, but the fact of the matter is that at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, am I in a positive relationship, you see? And the thing that I can say is that despite my childhood experience, I have materialized a positive male-female relationship for 13 years and given birth to I have given birth because it's all-inclusive, the wholeness principle, given birth to five beautiful children, the last two I delivered with my own hands. So when I talk about manhood, I'm talking from personal experience. You know, there are so many males who will talk about and try to blame women for all these things, but if I ask you, well, dude, are you in a positive relationship? No. Well, then shut your ass up because you have no idea about what it means to be in a positive relationship. Are you operating like a man? No. Well, then shut your ass up. You have no idea in terms of what it means to be a man. So I already know just in terms of how people tend to think, and I know some people may say that this is harsh. One of the concepts that I deal with is this, and I know this is getting raw. If you want to be successful in a particular area of your life, you go to someone who is successful in that particular area, in their own life, meaning that they're living a practical example every single day of that. If you want to be a failure in a particular way or in a particular area of your life, then you seek those people who are a failure in that particular area of your life. Because I am successful, I can speak on these topics and instruct on these topics and instruct, in particular, instruct young males on these particular topics so that they can be placed in a position later on in life to where they can attain a level of manhood and masculinity that would be greater than my own. But I can do that because I am living this every single day. So I'm saying this to say that when we begin to try to blame other people, what we really need to be looking at is looking at our own life. See, it's a mute point. If you're not in a positive relationship, then it's a mute point for you to talk about positive relationships. Now, you can talk about negative relationships all day because that's what you're used to, but that's not going to solve the issue, and it's not going to materialize a positive relationship for you or for anyone else. I am about solutions. Manhood is about creating solutions. It's not about blaming other people. Now, yes, could Ray Rice's wife be in it for the money? Yes, and I kind of have a sense that she is. Okay, but we should not focus simply on that and say, well, look, this is why, you know, women are staying in these relationships. That's besides the point. The point is, why are we in these negative relationships in the first place, you see? And the issue is, the reason why we are in these negative relationships, both men and women, with all these different degrees of dysfunctionality, is because we're not prepared to be in positive ones. Now, if you want to continue to be in negative ones, you continue to talk all this shit about black women and black men, and all men are dogs, all women are gold diggers. Yeah, keep talking that because you're setting up your reality, and you will continue to experience that reality. You continue to be happy, unhappy. If you want to experience something different, you're going to have to do something different, and you can start by looking at yourself in the mirror and ask a critical question as a woman. Am I the best woman that I am today, that I can be today? As a man, am I the best man that I can? See, when you ask that question and the answer is no, then you set yourself on course to begin to do the things to ascend yourself into manhood and to ascend yourself into womanhood so that you can be prepared for a positive relationship. Then you begin to change things. I'm about solutions, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Let me bring in, and I agree with you to an extent, but I also believe that for some that are out there, especially the condition of society at large, If it ain't rough, it ain't right. So, Unique, come on in and give me your perspective on the matter.
Greetings, and of course, Sharif, hello, how are you? And to Layla and Lori and Rudy and Yama, all of them, I always greatly appreciate coming on. And to Anna, I really appreciate you, King, like really, I really do, because even though you are a man talking from a man's perspective, I agree with a lot of you what you're saying, because even though you've given it a little raw, just a little bit, it's still truth. It still rings truth. When you made the prostitute comment, everything that you've been saying, I've not disagreed with 90% of it, 98% of it. You know, and though, but I understand you're speaking from your truth. And me today, I'm going to speak from my truth. I have been married for 15 years. 15 years I've been doing this. I tell people all the time, I feel like I've been through 10 men in one. But I approached my situation different than a lot of other people do. I am that part of aggression. I do have that anger held up in, or I did have that anger held up in me. I do understand the Ray Rice situation from the female perspective. I do get that. I do understand what people are saying, why they stay. But my issue behind all of this is simply this. As women, when you choose to stay and not choose to fix the situation, you're not doing anything. That is what my problem is with the whole thing. It's the fact that people choose to stay and you're not trying to fix the situation. When I chose to stay in my situation where we did have some issues going on, I was going to fix the situation. And if the situation was not going to be able to be fixed by me, then I'm going to leave. I didn't care what he said. I cared what he did. I had to look in the mirror and say, you know what? I brought them into this world. Everybody has a navel. I grew you. We're doing this together, period. It's you and me to the end. And if we're going to do this, then God damn it, we're going to do this. But we're not going to sit up here and play this game of disrespect. We're not going to sit up here and play this game of miscommunication. If we're going to talk, then we're going to talk. And you're going to respect what I have to say. And I, as a woman, had to learn to respect what he said. It is a journey. One of the elders I speak to, she says, marriage is the curriculum. I believe that wholeheartedly, because until you can get into a place where you have to look at yourself through the eyes of the person that is the reflection of you, where are you going to go? All you see is you. Just looking in the mirror, all you see is you.
Let me ask you a question, Unique. Let me ask you a question, because you said something that was, you know, I pick up on words. So you said, when you're with me, you're going to respect me, and I am going to learn to respect you. There was a distinction in that.
That's how
I want you to explain what it is. It was almost like, I'm telling you, this is what you need to do, and while you're doing that, I am going to try harder to do the same for you. Did you mean it that way, or did it just come out?
No. I did mean it that way, because I'm talking in past tense. When I went into that situation, we had issues. I'm not going to lie. Yes, that's exactly what I meant. I had to learn to respect him, but the respect for me and my situation, I felt like he had more to learn to do than I did. Now, was that the case at the time? No, but that was the stance that I took. Now, is that the stance that I take now? Of course not. I understood when I said those words, even back then, that there was still work to be done, and there was still work to be done. And I not only had to learn to respect him, but I had to respect him, because the more I started to see in myself, the more that I look at this man and I see this man as the reflection of me, I have to respect me. I can't learn just to respect me. I have to respect me. I can't just be doing it. I have to do it. So in that past tense, yes, you are, that was my first stance. It was I had to learn to respect him. Go ahead.
All right. Ms. DeHonor, why don't you jump in and give me your assessment of Sister Unique and what she's saying.
Oh, no, I feel her on that.
Because we all have to take a journey. That's all.
That's right. That's right. And see, for me, my journey, you know, my journey began earlier on, so that by the time I got to a certain point, I wasn't going to be tolerating being disrespected, and I wasn't going to be disrespecting women either. So some of us, it's a journey. People have these different journeys. What I appreciate about this sister is that she's giving it in a way where she's completely honest, and she's, in a sense, kind of raw about it, and we need to hear it that way, too. It's necessary. So in this sense, I accept everything that she says. It makes perfect sense to me.
Right. I had to learn to deal with my issues. I had to learn, just like you guys were saying earlier, everybody kept bringing up about how everybody basically has mommy and daddy issues. I talk about this all the time. I had to learn to respect him because he was not my father.
Mm.
You understand that? I had to learn to respect the man that was not my father because I did not respect my father. I had to learn to separate my father, the one, not idol, but the one man that I had in my life, no matter how bad or good he was, I did not respect him. And, of course, we all have the same type of story. It wasn't good. So my issue
Unique, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. And you're assertive and you're aggressive woman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it takes a strong man to balance you out, keep your frequencies and your vibrations at a suitable level. Now, if you were in the elevator with Ray Rice and he spit on you, which is what you said he did, what would you have done?
Well, first of all, he spit on her twice. He spit on her before she got into the elevator. Now, everyone knows that they were drunk. Everybody knows they were highly intoxicated. Now, I wouldn't have gotten in the elevator. It would have been a fight in public right then and there. I'm not saying that it was right, but I'm putting myself in her shoes. I think she's in her early or her mid-20s, so, and she's been with him, and she hasn't figured out how to fix the problem yet. She hasn't taken a good look at herself. I know me, in that standpoint, it would have been a fight right then and there, because I'm honest. It would have been some blows thrown. Real talk. Like, it would have happened. It wouldn't have been no elevator thing. It would have been out in the lobby. But see,
Stop right there. So if he would have spit on you, you would have went after him, and you would have swung on him, choked him, whatever you had to do. Now, if you initiated that contact, in the manner you just described, and he hit you back, who is at fault, Mr. Honor and Unique? Who is at fault?
You're both at fault. You're always both at fault. When you have two people in the situation, everybody, you always have the choice to walk away. Like I said, if I put myself in her shoes, now would I do that? Me, myself, if somebody spit on me, it would take a lot. I'm not going to lie. It would take a lot, but I would turn around and walk away because I am looking at a man that is 210 pounds of pure muscle. And do I really want it like that? At that time and point, it does become about the money because I've been riding with you, and you don't have any kind of respect enough for me to see where you're going to spit on me in my face. And you're going to lay your hands on me? So it's very easy for women to make that turn and be like, you know what? I was really here for you, and this is how you treat me, so I'm going to try to hit you where it hurts, in your pocket. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just explaining to you what the mindset is. I wouldn't handle that situation
All right, Mr. Honor, she said if he would have spit on her. You can hear there would have been a lot of emotions. The first thing would have came to her head, and we just being honest, and I love it, is that, boy, I was with you and you didn't have lunch money, and we sitting up here and you going to spit on me? Unique's gonna go upside his head. Okay, let's just forget about the roundabouts. He's gonna go upside his head. Mr. Ray is gonna hit her back, and I want you, Mr. Honor, to tell us who's to blame. Who is the victim in that situation? And there has to be a blame to the extent where who should have been the one to depart from that situation. Who caused the physical side of that situation?
Well, what I would say is that, like the sister said, and I appreciate the sister's candor too, by the way. I really do appreciate that. Ray Rice's wife is responsible for going up upside his head in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ray Rice is responsible for striking her. Now, the deeper part, so in other words, you know, they're both responsible for their actions. But the deeper part of this is we have to ask the question, and this is something that I would pose for people to think about. If a woman reacts to a man in that particular way, is it somehow morally or ethically okay for him to knock her out like Ray Rice did? And again, in this context, we're talking about a dude who is a football player and is a damn good football player. So we're not talking about an everyday a male in this sense. And he actually knocks her out. Is it justified somehow because of the scenario that plays itself out beforehand? And I'm just going to say this, that as a man, see, this is the thing. A man who is in control, because part of manhood is having discipline. You see what I'm saying? Part of manhood is being able to recognize that even if you are in a scenario wherein, let's say, a woman may be being abusive to you, that you should have enough self-discipline to be in control of yourself so that you don't knock her out. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't validate or it doesn't justify her behavior, but you got to be responsible for your own behavior. That's one of the main differences between a boy and a man. A boy tends to not be responsible for his own self-control, and he tends not to be responsible for his behavior. A man tends to be responsible for the degree of his own self-control, and he tends to be responsible for his behavior. So in this sense, if this scenario played itself out inside of an elevator, and we were dealing with someone who was actually operating like a man, again, we need to begin to start making these clear distinctions. There's no way that a man would have reacted the way in which Ray Rice did. See, Ray Rice was reacting like a little boy. And
mm-hmm.
The first thing the little boy does is lashes out. Well, that's the issue. We're not prepared for manhood. We're not prepared for positive relationships. And then another deeper issue is that this woman is willing to stay with this. So, yes, mm-hmm. I mean, we can look at it from various different perspectives, and we can look at who we're going to blame, but at the end of the day, it's a lack of preparation. This woman was not prepared to be an honorable woman, and this dude was not prepared to be an honorable man, and we need to say it like it needs to be said.
Right. Okay, well, I got another part, and I'm going to bring in another caller. If we talk about, we hear a lot of women, and men talk about, well, I stayed, and I endured the abuse, and you heard Dr. Phil do his TV you know, version of, well, you know, many, really many times, you know, the women are afraid to leave and everything. I think that's partly true. I told you about the benefits that a woman has to leave the household, and I think, you know, other entities play into that. But let's look at that to where if he was to allow Unique to hit him, and he did spit on her, and he took responsibility for that, and Unique got the sense that she can always hit him, okay, because he's not going to hit her back because he's honorable. What is any different than a woman staying and allowing herself to be hit than a man staying and allowing himself to be hit?
But there is no difference. That's what I'm saying. It's all about
right. Personal
choices. There is no difference. If I was in that situation, first of all, I wouldn't be in that situation. Let me say that first. That's why I keep putting it in her perspective, because Unique would not be in that situation to begin with. I'm going to make sure I'm not in that situation. I am not with a man that is like that. I'm with a man that is constantly compounding for a reason, because I am, because the woman in the house he needs to keep up with. Because I am honorable, therefore he is honorable, therefore we are honorable. That is the only way that it works. So it's always based off of a choice. Since I would not be put in that situation because there will already be respect established to begin with, it would not happen to me. So for me, I can say that because I'm not going to be there. I pay attention. I don't open my legs to just any old body. Never have, won't begin to, because I have a certain respect for me. I do. And therefore, I put that, and when you exude that respect out there, you are going to get that respect in return. When you turn down bullshit, it won't come to you because you done turned around and you don't even smell it anymore. You walk in the other direction. You smell
okay,
it before
you
came.
Okay, so let me ask you one more
question
before I get this other caller. Okay? You said something about they were drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've drank, and if I take a drink every now and again, I'm not ready to punch somebody or hit someone. I get silly, more than likely sleepy. Is the drinking an excuse? Because we see bar fights all the time. That's just exacerbating the behavior that is already within. So,
okay.
I mean, is the drinking has anything to do with it? The fact that
of
they were drinking?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know what drinking does? Drinking is an addictive habit because it does what? It makes you full with dopamine. It literally has a chemical reaction to your brain. That is why we like it. So if you are having an addictive issue and you are both in a place where you have so much dopamine running through your system, yes, some people get violent, some people get happy, some people get freaky, but there's a reason for all of those things happening because it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. So if you're releasing this type of chemical and you already, that wasn't the first time that boy done that. Real talk. He was way too cool about the situation. And that wasn't
That's
just
football.
No liquor, because if somebody else that was drunk would have done that, they would have had a shock and awe, like, I did
that's
not mean to do that. But that's not what happened. So since we are going to put that in there because that was a component of their night. They were both drinking, and they're little boys and little girls. When you drink, Sharif, you are a grown man drinking. You handle your liquor. You don't overboard. You don't do too much. You're talking about two people that are in a situation that don't even respect each other, and they're drinking. What do you think is going to happen? I don't know how many domestic violence victims can tell you, yes, they were already violent to begin with, but just like Honor said, when his father would come
okay.
home high, it was a turnt up situation. That's
okay.
why.
All right, well, hold up. I got one more caller coming in, 702-3147, if you want to chime in on the topic. All right. Well, we're at 2:42, and I just want to get some closing remarks. I enjoyed the show. I think we covered a lot of ground. We shared a lot of personal experiences. We had some great information come out of the topic. I want to get some closing arguments. Here I go. Some closing comments from Mr. Honor, and then let my panel close out. Sometimes this blog talk cuts off a few minutes sooner than it's supposed to. So if you would, sir, give us your closing remarks, your information, your website, and then we're going to move on to the rest of the panel.
Yes, well, I want to first thank you, Brother Sharif, for having me. I really appreciate it. I can say, and I've done a lot of radio interviews over the years, I really appreciate what you're doing here. And also appreciate how, the sisters who came on the call, all of them, in point of fact, spoke candidly and in some cases raw. That's needed too. And I really do appreciate that, and I respect that. The thing that I want to just depart with is just recognizing that the issue of domestic violence, it does take two to tangle on a certain level. And men need to become more responsible for our physical behavior. Right? This is just part of manhood. And women also have to be more responsible for their physical behavior. We also need to make better choices in terms of the people who we select as potential partners. And again, this gets back to the issue of being prepared for positive relationships. And in the absence of being prepared for a positive relationship, we will choose people to be in relationships with that will only bring us suffering and pain. One of the things that the sister said, too, I just want to piggyback on, was that when you watch the video, you can tell by his mannerisms, Ray Rice. He was very comfortable with what he did. You know, even after the elevator door opens up and how he brought her out and how he was, just his walk, you know, at a certain point, he kind of pushes her with one of his legs. I'm like, this isn't anything new. It's just this time it was caught on camera. And so women have to understand that you got to make good choices in terms of the types of men that you decide to be with and the types of men that you create children with. I'm not trying to place blame here. I'm just saying that as adults, we have to get to the point where we make better choices. And then let me just close out with this for men out there, because I want to go both ways. We have to be clear that our primary responsibility is to keep our spouses safe. My primary responsibility is to keep my wife safe, to keep my children safe. That's on all levels, psychologically, emotionally, especially physically. So when you're operating like that as a man, and this is how men should operate, the notion of me somehow hurting my wife physically, it's not even an option. And I think that when we raise the bar to that degree, then we can begin to at least look at our own behavior patterns, hopefully early on in life, and we look at what we need to change early on so that when we come of age, we can function to that capacity.
Exactly.
Manhood is about who you have become. It's not about what you have been through. Last statement here, and I'm going to say this as a point of encouragement for all males who happen to see this. I know I can be raw sometime about it, but it's because I am living this, and I want my sons to live this too. And there will be three
more.
All right,
we got 1 minute, so you got to get it through. I got to get through the rest of them. Go ahead.
It doesn't matter what you've been through in your life, and it doesn't matter whether or not your father was in your life, you young brothers who are listening here. It makes absolutely no difference. The point And the fact still remains that regardless of what your childhood was like, you can become something great.
Great. We appreciate you. We love you, Brother Honor. Appreciate your work. LennonHonor.com. Great, brother. We appreciate you participating. We'll have you back at some point. Definitely, you provided a great platform and injection into this topic, and we appreciate all your givings today. All right. Unique, appreciate you. Love you, sister. Your contributions as well. I don't want to get cut off again because I just can't gauge when they're going to cut off. It says
no
we
problem.
Have 13 minutes, but appreciate your contributions. Let's keep the topic going. We'll have one in the near future, probably not next week, but I appreciate your contributions. Layla, Lori, and Rudy, just take 10 seconds each to summarize commentary on the show today.
I think the show was fantastic. Obviously, I know we'll have some more input and do it again. First line of defense for ourselves is self-respect and respect for others. As others respect you, remember the golden rule.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, I would say for me, every day each of us have a pair of shoes waiting on us on the side of the bed to slip on and either guiding and leading or putting on a pair of shoes to lead to destruction. Choose your shoes wisely in how you walk through your life, and put them on diligently every day and walk proud. Thank you for coming to our show today.
Thank you. Layla, 10 seconds.
Okay, it's a beautiful show. I just wanted to let everyone know domestic violence has cost about $8.3 billion in the U.S., 24% of adult women, and 14% of adult men have been physically abused by their partners. So 70% of women are due to have heart disease if they've been abused, and 80% experience a stroke, and 60% develop some type of asthma if they've been abused. With that being said, I just want to thank everybody for being here, and have a blessed week.
Thank you. Peace. I want to appreciate everybody for coming out and congregating under the setting of community with Thor Radio Network. We will see you Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.